is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon, good Tuesday afternoon to you. Welcome to One Bills Drive. Welcome to our One Buffalo studio at One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones here. That's until me. 3 o'clock today to talk about the Bills and the NFL with a good lineup of guests coming up for you today. You want to hear the lineup?
Let's hear
the lineup. Coming up at 12:30, Donald's going to get into his nuts and bolts about the Bills and their loss at Carolina the other day. And you're going to talk about the running game. Everybody, well, not everybody, but many people want to know what went wrong in the running game. You've done a little breakdown on that, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a little breakdown. We actually did a little breakdown last week of what went right.
Yeah,
and this week we're going to talk about what went wrong and what they need to get corrected, you know, if they want to be a little bit better. If they want to be a good offense, they need to be able to run the ball. You have to be able to run the ball. The issue is that the defense that they're facing this week is going to give them problems like the defense they just faced. So they got to get it corrected quickly.
Yeah, they sure do. The Denver Broncos defense, fourth in the NFL going into this week. Carolina, their defense is number one in the NFL after they shut down the Bills.
Wow, they're number one, huh?
Yeah, the Bills are number two in defense. But 1-1 says more about them than what their defensive rankings. And so nuts and bolts presented by Napa coming up with Donald Jones at the bottom of this hour. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Fame running back, will be live on the line with us. We'll get his, he's got a thing or two to say, I would think, about the running game problems. He would,
oh, yeah.
He would know a little bit, I would think, right?
Yeah, I'm sure he was – you know, breaking it down as the game went on in his head and what went wrong in that game. Yeah, he's going to have a lot to say about it and how they can do things differently and if they need to possibly look at, you know, moving Shady around a little bit more to try to get it done or even possibly going back into the shotgun and running a little bit more of what they ran last year. Not totally, but just a little bit more just to keep the team off balance.
So he's coming up. Thurman's with us at 1 o'clock today for his regular weekly visit. Trey Wingo from ESPN joins us at 2 o'clock. Trey Wingo from ESPN's NFL Live got some thoughts on the Bills and their issues and some thoughts from around the National Football League 2 weeks into it. We talked to Trey on Tuesdays for an overview of the NFL. And coming up at 2:30, a preview of this week's high school football game right here in New Era Field, the Canisius Crusaders against the Marauders of St. Joe's. Donald and Chris Brown will have that game, and we'll talk with Canisius High School football coach Rich Robbins coming up at 2:30 live in studio. You're going to have fun with that game, Donald. This is a big rivalry game.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard about this rivalry since I played here. You know, I never really went down to actually see the game be played, but I had a chance to watch the film from last year's game, and I could see the fans and everybody. It looked like it was packed there, so I'm looking forward to it.
So that's the show today. We'd like to get you involved as well. The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. To get things started, let's talk a little bit about the Buffalo defense. We know how much of a struggle it was offensively for the Bills and Carolina Sunday, but the defense comes up with another good performance. As I said, ranked number two in the National Football League so far this year after two games. Quite a turnaround from where they were a year ago when you think about it, and it's almost a flipped script from a year ago when the offense was fairly productive and the defense had major issues. Right now, the defense ranked number two. We know it's only two games, but as we take a step back and try to think about where the Bills are and where they've been, want to know from you who gets the most credit, not all of it, but the most credit for the Bills' strong start two games in on defense. Who do you think? It's our Twitter poll, and we've narrowed it down to a couple. You may want to expand on that on the telephone line. Who gets the most credit for the Bills' strong start defensively this year? Is it the coaching staff, Sean McDermott, Leslie Frazier, what they're able to do defensively? Right now, 55% of you say they are the guys. Is it the defensive backfield, Jordan Poyer in particular with his strong start to the season? Is it 21% of you say that is where it begins? Is it the defensive front? Lorenzo Alexander's had two really good games, Donald. Kyle Williams has played strong as well. 21% of you say that. Is there something else at play here? Who gets the most credit? We know it's a team game. We know that things are working well over the entire defense. But from you, we want to know who gets the most credit for what the Bills have been able to do defensively so far. Give us a call, 803-0550, the number to call. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. The Twitter poll, who do you think should get the most credit for how the Bills have played defensively? I'll go with the majority, at least initially here. I know that Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier have obviously installed a new defensive scheme. I think they've got a renewed focus on the part of the defense. I think their ethos is sort of permeated into the locker room. When you walk around that locker room Sunday in Carolina, knowing how well the Bills played against the Panthers, and you hear veterans and young players, Shaq Lawson, Jordan Poyer, talk about, yeah, we played well, but we didn't get any takeaways. So I think that's indicative of what McDermott and Frazier have instilled in this team. So I'll go with them, but I also think the defensive front has been outstanding. And a lot of it, Lorenzo Alexander. I could make an argument for him being the defensive MVP through the first two games. All over the field, rushing the passer, dropping into coverage. Oh, by the way, he's still got a healthy dose of reps on special teams. Kyle Williams, his usual solid self. He got poked in the eye early on in the game Sunday. Missed a couple of plays, came right back out. There was one play on the goal line in particular that Kyle made where he just submarined underneath basically a double-team block. I believe it was Shaq Lawson came over and got the tackle on the running back from behind, but it was Kyle Williams who blew up the play. He's been outstanding.
Those are the things that, you know, Kyle is good at. You know, he might not actually make the tackle, but he is somewhere around it. He actually had to force the back to go sideline to sideline or something like that. You know, he just is disruptive up there in the middle, and that's why Kyle has been so good for so long. We always talk about is he underrated? Is he overrated? But the thing is, Kyle is not always the guy that's making tackles. But if you watch him in a game, for the most part, he is playing in the backfield. He's playing on the opposite team's side of the line of scrimmage. And that's why he is so good, and that's why people respect him so much, still getting it done at his age. I think, you know, I understand the majority and why people would say McDermott and Leslie Frazier with their schemes and how they've gone back to this 4-3. Everybody loves this defense being in a 4-3. And obviously the players love it. They've talked about it all through training camp. Those guys are happy to be back, and this is what they're used to doing. And it shows out there on the field. It's simple. They don't have to think as much. We've heard all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, it still comes down to the players making the plays on the field. If they line those guys up in this scheme and those guys are not making plays on the field, well, then what will we be talking about?
Right.
You know? So I get what the majority is saying there, and I give the coaches a lot of credit for changing the schemes and making good play calls and all of that stuff throughout the course of the game. But the players are making the plays on the field, and specifically for me, the defensive front, those are the guys that are really making this thing happen. They are shutting down the opposing team's run game, and they are getting to the quarterbacks. And when you are doing that, you force the quarterbacks to throw the ball up. Now, obviously, last week they didn't get any turnovers, anything like that. Week one they did, but last week the Bills DBs had chances for turnovers. They had those opportunities to get those turnovers. It just didn't come out to their way. But I think when you have a very good defensive front, and we always know you win football games in the trenches, all right? It starts in the trenches. If you have a good offensive line and a good defensive line, you will be able to move the ball, and you will be able to shut a team's offense down. The defensive front is doing their job, which makes it easier for the guys on the back end.
Let's hear from you. Who do you think is most responsible for the strong defensive start this season for the Buffalo Bills? Lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can join us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Leslie Frazier, the Bills' defensive coordinator, was asked about this topic yesterday when he met the media. And you think about it, the upheaval they've had on defense and brand-new system, brand-new secondary that they've put in place, a couple of new additions. Frazier was asked what he thinks of his defense after two games, and to be surprised they've been able to do all this with all the changes they've had defensively. Here's what he said.
You know, I just know we have really good leadership on defense, and we got some guys that have really been busting their tails, all the way back in the spring. The coaches and I, we were talking about it in training camp, the high character that we have on defense and how hard the guys work. And we've always been hoping all along that they'd be rewarded for their hard work and practice and their preparation. And they're going out and executing their assignments on Sunday. Now, in our business, every week's different. We'll have a different opponent this next week with a different style offense, and there are different requirements. But our guys, I mean, they're working hard. They're buying into everything we're asking them to do from a game plan standpoint and how we want to approach things. And we have tremendous leadership in that locker room on the defensive side, and that makes a big difference when you're trying to get guys to buy into something that's a little bit different than what they've done before.
Leslie Frazier talking about his defense and his thoughts on how well things have gone and why they may have gone well in this early stage of the season. What do you think? Who's most responsible for the Bills' success defensively through 2 weeks? 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter. A call here from Steve in Watertown. Hello, Steve. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, John and Don. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think it starts, like Donald said, I think it starts in the trenches. But what a refreshing sign to see cornerbacks that know how to tackle, safeties that know how to wrap up and throw people to the ground. It's early. I understand it. And it was a baseball score last week, but I was glued to that defense. I was glued to watching Shaq Lawson and Kyle Williams be disruptive. It was a fun game to watch. We went right down to the wire and could have won it. We almost pulled the rabbit out of a hat against a pretty good football team. I think it's going to be an entertaining season. We'll be lucky to be 500. But for anybody to start throwing rocks at the offensive coordinator, what some of the nonsense I heard yesterday, it's ludicrous. This team's going to win on defense, and we're going to pound the ball, and we're going to be okay. But it's going to be a fun season.
Okay, thanks for your call. Yeah, I didn't hear, I guess, a couple of rocks being thrown at the offensive coordinator. You know, I get that. People get frustrated. I get that. But, you know, the one thing about defense, I know people want to see the scoreboard light up, but when you have a good defense, Donald, you are going to be in games. And last Sunday was evidence of that. And as very few plays as the Bills were able to make during that game on offense, they were still in it up until the last couple of seconds. That's a function of having a good defense, quite simply. The defense keeps you in the game,
right.
And hopefully they're going to win more than their share of their games, and hopefully they're going to win some of those. But for now anyway, being kept in the game by a really solid defense, I think, is important for this team.
I think, yeah, when you have a good defense, it's always going to keep you in games. It's always going to be entertaining at the end of the game because they will give you an opportunity at the end of a game to win a game, you know, and that's all you can ask for. As an offense, yeah, we need to score points, and we need to score a lot of points. Everybody wants to see that on offense. But all you can ask for as a player in this league or in any league is the opportunity to win a game at the end of a game. You know, and when you have a good defense, that you will get those opportunities on multiple occasions. It doesn't even matter the team that you're playing. You know, these offenses that the Bills have coming up that are – you know, high-flying offense, high-octane offense, whatever, you know, word you want to use to describe them, this defense, if they play well and they play like they've played in the last couple of weeks, they will be able to slow down those offenses. But our offense has to score points if they want to win games, and they have to do a lot more than they did in this past game because if you're not able to, number one, sustain long drives, which was a key to a key to victory in last week's game for me, if you can't sustain long drives, it's going to wear your defense down throughout the course of a season. You have to keep those guys fresh, all right? You can't go into every game feeling like we're going to have a bunch of three and outs, but at the end of the game, we're still going to be in this thing. Your defense will wear down.
Let us know what you think. Who gets the most credit for the Bills' success through two games? We know it's only two games. On the defensive side of the ball, lines are open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can vote in a Twitter poll or weigh in on Twitter. Here's an interesting tweet. When you sort through all of the junk and all the snark on Twitter, once in a while you'll find a little kernel of something that makes sense. And an interesting question here. Drew tweets in, temper our praise for the defense. The secondary was getting torched all day. So many wide open wide receivers. Couple of missed throws in the red zone for touchdowns. Yeah, Cam missed a couple, but
yep.
Was the secondary getting torched the other day?
You know, I keep saying this. When you run the scheme that they're going to run, you are going to have receivers open. They are running zone, okay? When you are running zone, and it, as good as the defensive front is, they won't be able to get to the quarterback every single time, you know? And so when you're not able to get to the quarterback with your front four and everybody else is dropping back into coverage, the offense just has to find a hole, and there are holes in every zone, all right? And so they get paid to find a hole, and they are trained well to find a hole. It doesn't mean that these guys are getting torched. The DBs are still making plays on the ball when they're around it, all right? And on the other side of this thing, wide receivers and quarterbacks get paid a lot of money to catch passes. So they're going to catch passes. All right? It happens like that. You
said something yesterday, and I think we're all kind of adjusting to this new look defense. But, Donald, you said something about how they are what appear to be, anyway, a bend but don't break defense.
Right.
And they bent a couple of times, didn't allow anybody in the end zone, but they bent a couple of times. They've given up just one touchdown in two games, by the way. But they did give up a couple of chunk plays against Carolina.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, the nature of what they're going to do defensively. And they're going to force you. Look, the Panthers had long drives, including that killer fourth quarter drive that went 8.5 minutes. But the thinking is, it appears in this kind of defense, go ahead, work your way down the field. We're betting that eventually you hurt yourself on the mistake or will, stiffen up near the goal line, right? It looks like the style they're going to play here.
That is the style they're going to play. They're going to get pressure with the guys up front, which is the front four. And like I said, they won't be able to always get there, but they're going to try and get pressure. Every now and then they're going to dial up their blitzes, and they're going to send guys at the quarterback. But for the most part, they want to get pressure with the front four. Everybody else will drop back into coverage. The offense, what they have to do is find holes. And if the guys up front aren't able to get to the quarterback, then they will be able to find a hole. And that's just how this defense is. I remember playing against Coach Leslie Frazier and these types of defenses when I was playing here, and that was what – it was like, look, we're going to get our opportunities. We just got to find the hole. And when you have experienced receivers that know how to find those holes, they're going to find them. And when you have quarterbacks that can hit them, they're going to find those holes. So, yeah, you're going to give up some big chunk plays. You're going to have those drives where they are moving the ball down the field. But once they get closer into the red zone, the defense is designed to be able to clamp things down in the red zone. They can go to man as well. They just go a lot more zone out in the field. But once you get into that red zone, high red area, they will clamp down and they will shut you down.
Who's responsible? Who gets credit for Buffalo's strong defensive play so far this season? A couple of tweets. Douglas Briggs Jr., nice to see the coaches pumped and passionate. You could see the defense feeding off that. I mean, we stopped the Panthers. I'm not sure if there's snark there or not. I don't know if that was anything I read on Twitter.
Another thing about the Panthers' offense, and their passing game in general is designed – for 15, 20-yard plays because they have those big receivers. They don't really have shifty receivers that work
and
underneath.
They don't have flyers are going to open
right,
up deep.
Right, exactly. So it's designed for end cuts and things over the middle of the field that go right at 15 to 20 yards. That's why it seems like, man, they keep picking up these 15, 20-yard chunks. Their offense is designed to do that. Our defense is designed where if you can't get to the quarterback, it happens like that. And they get paid to catch passes. Like, they're good, too.
803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The Buffalo defense, who gets the credit for how good they played through two games? Silas Greenback, quote, tweets in, it's hard to choose one, but our run stopping and secondary has been great. And it's hard to separate those two, Donald. I went through some plays yesterday with head coach Sean McDermott where they were sacks. Mm-hmm. But they were sacked in a couple of cases that were created by the coverage downfield. Cam had nowhere to go.
Right.
Those two work in conjunction with each other. And, leave it to a defensive-minded coach to point that out. He did when we looked at plays yesterday.
I mean, this because you run so much zone, and then every now and then you mix up man just to throw those guys off. And our DBs, can cover man-to-man. And so when you have good coverage down the field, it can create sacks where it's like – It looked like there was a time, I think the sack Lorenzo got, he was spying on Cam Newton, and then he went late. Cam Newton is standing in the pocket, and Lorenzo takes off late to get to Cam Newton. I believe it was a sack, or he at least pressured him on that one. But you're going to have those delayed, it's not really a delayed blitz, but it seems like a delayed sack where it's like, man, he's standing back there, and then all of a sudden somebody comes free. And that's because the coverage on the back end is good. He's standing in there trying to wait for somebody to come open, but the DBs are doing a good job.
Who gets the credit? Who's most responsible for Buffalo's good start defensively? They're number two in the NFL on defense right now. Yeah, we know who they played, but those are the numbers and those are the stats, and that's who they played. Eddie calling from Alden, New York. Hello, Eddie. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say to you that the defense did really well Sunday, I thought. But I look at this game was not a division game, right? And I feel, too, that the Bills are a good team to support. And, I've been a fan for years and years, and I'm a season ticket holder. And, I just could never, ever, ever give my head up on Buffalo Bills liking them, It's great. My address is wrong on there. It's Auburn, actually. So, but, yes, I wanted to tell you guys, you have a good show. I always like watching you,
Thank you.
It's always fun.
Thanks, Eddie. That was fun to talk with you. Charlie in Buffalo. Hello, Charlie.
Hello. How are you doing, John? Don, how are you doing today? Good. I got to say, the question I got to put up is, say, is that it's a collective unit. They're all playing for each other. Anybody coming off the bench, they're coming in and they're contributing and they're doing what they got to do and the coaches are helping them. And I think this defense is going to keep them in every game. But like you guys emphasized earlier, the offense has got to get hang on to that ball more, get that running game going, and get points to keep them in every ball game. And I think they'll be all right this year. Have a good day now, guys.
Thank you, Charlie. And Charlie's right. The offense clearly has to get better, and we're willing to talk about that. And you know, here's the thing, Donald, and you hate to frame everything in terms of where they were last year because different coach, different coaching staff, different scheme, in a couple of cases, different players. But last year, the defense was the problem.
Yeah.
You know, 19th ranked overall. We saw how it was, how disorganized it seemed, and, you know, how undisciplined and unfocused they were. This year, the offense in the first two games has been the problem. Last year, the offense was fairly productive, top 10 in scoring. And that was only with 8 games from Sammy Watkins, too.
Right.
I guess I'm waiting to see if the offense catches up to maybe get back to close to where they were a year ago. If they do that, with the way this defense is playing, the Bills could be in good shape. But so far, there are not very few. Based on last Sunday, there were a few positive signs last Sunday that this Bills offense is going to be productive.
And I think that's something that's been happening for, I guess, the last 17 years, right, where you have one unit that is playing good. You have another unit or the other two units not as strong, right? And you can't put everything together. You got to be able to put everything together. Now, the defense will keep you in games, and it will keep you right around. The offense, you know, there will be times where they will actually make the play and win games. There will be times, like we saw on Sunday, where they don't make the play and they don't end up winning the game. But they have to be able to put everything together. And we're all hoping that starting Sunday they can put – everything together, and that's offense, defense, and special teams. You got to have a good, solid – you got to be able to make plays on all of those units. If you block one punt on special teams, you know, that's a scoop and score opportunity, or that's at least you're getting the ball in their territory where you're about to go ahead and score a touchdown, and you have momentum shift. So you have to be sound in your technique and make plays in all phases of your game. And if you do that, then you'll end up winning games.
We'll see how it works out. You know, one of the things, and maybe one of the most pleasant surprises of the Buffalo defense so far has been the play on the back end, the defensive backfield, brand-new defensive backfield, and a lot of that initiated by Jordan Poyer, who had another sack this past Sunday, had a actually two great pass breakups down in the near the goal line. When Leslie Frazier, the Bills' defense coordinator, met with the media late yesterday afternoon, he was asked about Jordan Poyer and asked about what it was that the coaches or scouts saw in Jordan Poyer when he was at Cleveland that led the Bills to bring him here. Here's what he said.
You know, I don't want to say that we've been surprised because he's our starting safety, and it's not by default. He earned the position. He's a smart guy. He's shown some athleticism. You've seen what he's done when he's a blitzer for us. He's gotten his hands on some balls. So he's really playing well. He does a good job of kind of helping to run things with our secondary between him and Micah. But we're really pleased with the way he's played, and hopefully he'll just continue that and continue to maintain that and even up it a little bit as we go forward. But he's done a really, really good job for us, really good.
Jordan Poyer, pleasant surprise. I didn't see that. You know, we talked about this. I didn't see Jordan Poyer being the guy who'll be the standout. And we'll see how it plays out during the season. I thought of the two safeties, Micah Hyde might be the guy who jumped out at you, but Jordan Poyer has been a really pleasant surprise so far.
Yeah, he has. He's been the one that's been, I guess, the playmaker on the back end of the defense. Micah Hyde he's made some tackles. He's more of the quiet player on the back end of the defense. He seems to be more of the quarterback of the back end of the defense. We kind of figured it would be switched. You know, it would be flipped and Micah Hyde would be the one making plays and not Jordan Poyer, at least coming down in the box and making all of these different plays. But Jordan Poyer has come to play in these first couple of games. He's the one that's coming down and he's blitzing and he's sacking quarterbacks, back-to-back games with sacks. That is a great thing. It's good to see him playing well. You're going to need both of those guys to play well and the rest of those DBs as you move into this schedule.
I think they signed him on the same day last March, right?
I believe
Hyde
so,
and Poyer.
Yeah.
I mean, they were signed essentially at the same time back in free agency, and the Bills had their eye on Jordan Poyer. Here's what Leslie Frazier said about that.
One of our secondary coaches, Bobby Babbage, who works with our safeties, had some inside information because he had been on the staff with Cleveland prior. So he knew a little bit about Jordan, talked to us about him, thought he'd be a guy. Looking at our situation here, we were so thin at the position when we arrived after we evaluated what was on the roster. And Jordan was a guy we wanted to take a look at who he thought might fit what we were trying to get accomplished. And so we made the decision to bring him in. And, boy, it was a great decision. He's really, you know, stepped up like we were all hoping that he would.
Does it seem like with him and Micah, I mean, these aren't guys that, I mean, Jordan has been flashing, obviously. They're not guys that scream their names off the page when you look down an NFL roster, but it just seems like they really fit a piece of the puzzle. Leslie, can you just kind of go over, like, how they kind of fit together in your defense? Right.
Well, you know, we're always talking about 1/11th when it comes to our football team, our defense. And to have two guys that are on the same page mentally, they really understand what we're trying to get done physically. You could see some things yesterday from game one to game two where you're beginning to see the maturation when it comes to the looks that we're trying to give offenses, just the matchups. There were times, a number of times, where we matched up Micah on Olsen when he was in the ball game, and that's because of his skill set. But the fact that the synergy between the two of them has been so good from day one, it probably goes back to who they are as people. Neither one of those guys are big ego guys. They're more concerned with the team and just, you know, doing what they can do to help the football team. And when you have a couple of individuals like that, then you have a chance, as opposed to making it about me and my going to the Pro Bowl or my starting. They're not those type of individuals. They are team-oriented guys, and they really want to do what's best for the team. And so you get that type of camaraderie, you have a chance to have a pretty good pair.
They look like a pretty good pair back there, Poyer and Micah Hyde at the Bills safety spot. We're going to talk more with you about this. Who's most responsible for the Bills' defensive success through the first 2 weeks this season? Got phone lines open throughout the course of the show, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. You can vote in our Twitter poll. Speaking of Jordan Poyer, for the second week in a row, he's the player of the week, the Blue Rock Energy player of the week. Thanks for voting in. We took the votes over the last 24 hours. And this week's Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week, safety Jordan Poyer for the Buffalo Bills. Poyer got 64% of the vote to be the Blue Rock Energy, 65% of the vote for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. Don't forget, you can vote the morning after each game. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. Jordan Poyer, the Bills' Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. What about what went down inside the game? Donald Jones is ready to take a close look at the nuts and bolts of the Bills' troubled running game in the Sunday against Carolina. We're back with that when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back with the show from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones. The Bills coming off the loss against Carolina. Coming up, the game against the Denver Broncos. We're going to break down a little bit of that as we move through the week, obviously, what the Broncos have to offer. We're also going to deal with the Buffalo defense. That's our Twitter poll today. Who's most responsible for the Bills' fast start on the defensive side of the ball? Is it the coaching staff, particularly Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier? Is it the front seven, guys like Kyle Williams and Lorenzo Alexander? Is it the defensive backfield, Jordan Poyer in particular, or somebody else? We'll get back to that and take your phone calls on that issue at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Biggest problem, obviously, from Sunday's game, Donald, was the offense. Mm-hmm. And big problem with the running game. That's their bread and butter. It's their foundation. It's the rock upon which they tried to build this house, and they were unable to do it against the Carolina Panthers. Yes, a good defensive front. We know that. We acknowledge that. We'll give them that. But if the Bills can't run the football on a regular and consistent basis, they're going to have trouble. They had 69 yards on the ground, 3 yards per carry against Carolina. And now Donald's ready to break it down with us with his nuts and bolts feature as he digs into the nitty-gritty of the Bills' loss. It is presented by Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Nuts and bolts, let's talk about the run game. What went wrong, Donald? What did you see when you looked over the video?
So, all right, like I said in the previous segment, it doesn't matter if offense or defense, you win games in the trenches. It all starts up front. And so when we think back to last week and we think about what went wrong in that game, how come we couldn't run the game? How come we couldn't run the ball on that team? Think back to the first game, they were able to do things right up front, the offensive 190
line. 190 yards to, right. What, 60 yards?
Exactly. But this past week, and we talked about it, they were going to have some trouble with – Kawan Shorts and those linebackers and those boys up the middle.
Yeah.
And going into the game, we predicted that. It wasn't going to be easy, and it definitely was not easy for this team. So here we go as we
You looked at some of this video.
At some of the video. When you think back to the game, there was a draw play. And I remember thinking about this draw play, and it was like, man, if they just hold the block, if they just hold the block a little bit longer, or if they just play on the Panthers' side of the line of scrimmage, then they'll be okay. So when I thought back to it and I went back and watched some of the video, I saw exactly what I saw when I watched the game. So what I saw was the offensive linemen, the defensive linemen playing on the other side of the ball. The defensive linemen were playing on the Bills' side of the line of scrimmage. And when you're doing that one-on-one, it doesn't matter if you're double-teaming somebody. It doesn't matter if you are one-on-one. You need to be able to hold your block. And the Bills' offensive line, they were not able to get that done. And when you're not able to get that done one-on-one, you won't be able to win games, and that was an issue in this game. You know, they had problems with Kawan Short.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Mills had issues with Kawan Short. Richie Incognito had issues with Latulele.
Star Latulele.
Yeah, Star Latulele. They had real issues with those guys up the middle, and Shady McCoy, as shifty as he is, he can't get it done by himself.
I mean, you would expect that those would be difficult guys to block. They were. But they have to find an answer. I mean, you can't just, if you're going to have any success, this Bills team on offense, you have to find an answer, even against good defensive linemen. They'll face good defensive linemen this week.
Right. You're going to face good defensive linemen this week. When you think back to last week, there were also times where they would try to run that zone stretch play, you know, and try to go outside against against that fast-flowing defense. And that's an issue as well because – they're not getting pushed up the middle, and the linebackers are also fast. So they're flowing right with LeSean McCoy. It didn't matter if they pitched it. It didn't matter if they went with the zone. And when you think back to last week, there were a couple of times where when they went with that zone stretch scheme, the defensive ends for the Carolina Panthers totally shut down what they totally boxed everything in. And the linebackers were fast flowing, so when the Bills wanted to go to the left or to the right, it didn't really matter. They weren't able to get it done because the defensive linemen totally sealed off the end of the line of scrimmage. And once they did that, LeSean McCoy would try to cut it back up, and he had nowhere to go.
And these are guys like we talked about them yesterday, Mario Addison on one side,
yes.
Shaq Thompson on the other mm-hmm. side. These are guys who were making plays, and this is what the Jets did not do a week ago. A week ago, we were here doing nuts and bolts and talking about how well that new scheme, that scheme worked for the Bills, the zone blocking scheme. Nothing remotely close to that in this game.
Nothing remotely close to that. They weren't able to move those guys off the ball at all, you know. And so when they were trying to do something different, when they were trying to go with stretch, they tried to pitch it on a 4th-and-1. They couldn't do anything because you could not get any movement up front. When you can't get movement up front, nothing is going to work for you. And what happens is when you can't run the ball, you then can't pass the ball.
Right.
Because they don't trust. They already didn't trust that you could pass the ball. But then when they know that you are a one-dimensional team and they have now shut down what that one dimension is, well, then they decide that, okay, if you want to pass the ball now to try to beat us, we know that's not something that you're strong at, and we pin our ears back, and we go right at your quarterback. So if you think back to when Tyrod Taylor was dropping back, as soon as he was dropping back, even starting off in the shotgun, as soon as he was dropping back or as soon as he was getting the ball in the shotgun, those defensive ends and those linebackers were up the field fast, and it didn't matter. They weren't worrying about anything that the Bills were trying to do. They were just pinning their ears back, and they were playing on the other side of the line of scrimmage. And the one dude that I knew was going to be good, as old as he is Julius Peppers.
You knew he was going to be good because he's been good.
He's
for
been good,
15
right.
years.
But I knew he was going to be some trouble, you know.
He was trouble.
And our tackles had trouble with Julius Peppers. He's been good for so long. Old as he is still getting the job done.
So quick. That shocked me, a guy. And, you know, we're talking about him like he's decrepit old, but he's old. He's been in the league for a while, and he has not lost, it appears, that quick burst, that first step.
No, he has not lost that first step at all. And it didn't matter if he lined up on the left or the right side of the line. He was in the backfield. As soon as the ball was snapped, he was going right at Tyrod Taylor because he did not respect the offensive lineman at all, and he used his speed rush, and Tyrod Taylor had nowhere to go.
So we see, you know, and we saw the game and saw how it went down with the Bills, and you talk about them losing some of these individual battles, but how much of it is schematic? For instance, a week ago we were singing the praises of the zone blocking scheme, how well Shady and Mike Tolbert seemed to adapt to a new blocking scheme, and they got 190 yards on the ground with Tyrod contributing to that as well. And then they basically fall off the table with just 69 yards rushing. And I see the one-on-one things you talk about, but what about the scheme? I mean, we've even had people say they should go back to what they've done. They led the league in rushing for 2 years.
Yeah, they should go back to what they did last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to totally change the scheme to what they did last year. I do think that they will, as Coach McDermott said in his press conference yesterday, they probably will go back to a little bit of what they did last year. And that's Tyrod Taylor in the shotgun, LeSean McCoy right next to him, a little bit of that. You can run some more of that zone look from the shotgun, you know, where both of those guys can see everything happening at the line of scrimmage. And you can now use Tyrod Taylor's legs as a weapon as well, because when they go with that zone type of field, it looks kind of like an option type of field. But when he hands that ball off to LeSean McCoy and he runs out the other side, it kind of keeps those linebackers honest, you know, because you got to respect Tyrod Taylor's legs. So you give Shady the ball going to the left, Tyrod Taylor runs out to the right, you can get at least two linebackers to follow Tyrod Taylor, and it opens things up for LeSean McCoy.
You know, it'd be one thing to say, well, that was Carolina's defense. They're pretty good. Luke Kuechly does all that film study. But here comes another great defense this week. I mean, it's not like it's going to get any easier this week.
Right. And you know, they don't have the big, big names up the middle, but the guys are solid up the middle. You know, and last year Denver's run defense was not that strong. It was the weak point of their defense. It seems like this year they have truly made an emphasis to make sure that they shut down anything. They were getting gashed up the middle last year. They haven't allowed that yet this year. And Dallas last week couldn't get it done. And if you talk about a run game, one of the best run games in the game right now, run teams in the game right now, it is the Dallas Cowboys with that strong offensive line. They couldn't get anything going. And once they knew Dallas had to throw the ball to get back into the game, you get three interceptions by their DBs, right? So the Bills will have to make sure that they play on Denver's side of the line of scrimmage. You have to get push up front. If you can't get push up front, it's not going
to
work.
It's going to have to get fixed, Donald, or else we're in for an extremely long year.
Yeah, it's going to be a long year. There was a play last week where, and we talked about when they run this zone stretch, sometimes you get a cutoff on the backside of it. Last week they ran a zone to the left, and Jordan Mills was trying to cut the guy on the backside, on the right side. LeSean McCoy cuts back, and Jordan Mills is on the ground because he cut right in the hole.
Yeah.
And so when Shady goes to cut back, he runs right into Jordan Mills laying on the ground and has nowhere to go. Those types of things can happen. All right, so that's what we talk about, technique. If you're cutting a guy on the backside, you need to make sure that you don't cut him in the actual hole that LeSean McCoy wants to run in.
Got to fix it. All right, Nuts and Bolts with Donald Jones, presented by Napa. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Going to turn our focus back to the defensive side of the ball, what's gone well for the defense, or anything you want to talk about. Phone lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Time now for Milestones, presented by Units Upstate New York Transplant Services. Tyrod Taylor had 125 yards passing against Carolina Panthers on Sunday. And with that, Tyrod moves into seventh place all time on the Bills' passing yardage list. He moved past Dennis Shaw. Tyrod now with 6,407 passing yards. Kelly, obviously number one, 35,400 yards. Joe Ferguson ranked number two. Jack Kemp, third all-time passing yardage leader for the Bills. Then Donald's buddy Ryan Fitzpatrick, believe it or not, is fourth all-time in passing yardage. Drew Bledsoe is fifth. Doug Flutie is sixth. And Tyrod Taylor now seventh place all-time on the Bills' all-time passing yardage list.
Now, he's seventh. You have the numbers in front of you at all?
Not everybody's.
Like, how close is he to
Well, Flutie would be the next one up. I don't have that in front of me.
Oh, okay.
You can do that research.
I'll do it.
I'm going to hold you to that.
All right.
Milestones presented by Units. Save lives. Join Team Units. Donate blood. Visit units.org. We're going to have more on Units coming up a little bit later on in the show. Talking a little bit about the Buffalo defense or the offense, whatever you'd like to talk about, Donald Jones and I, here until 3 o'clock this afternoon. The lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's go to Frank in Cheektowaga. Hello, Frank. Welcome. You're on the air.
How are you doing, Murph?
Good, good.
Listen, I had a couple of questions. Obviously, you know, our defense has been doing real well, of course. But I had a couple of questions that I wanted to ask. I keep on hearing about, you know, you should have never gotten rid of Sammy and Darby. And I understand Darby is injured and he's going to be out a while. And I've been trying to find something on Sammy. I don't even know if he's playing. Is Sammy playing? Because I can't find any stats on him at all.
Yeah, he's playing. I haven't really followed it that closely. I know he's playing. Let me look up some stats.
We were talking about this actually earlier today. I think he had like maybe two or three targets this last game. You know, they're not really even throwing him the ball. That could be, you know, just as a result of him coming there late. I don't know. He's been there for a little while now, so he should understand it. But I think, you know, ultimately they have Tavon Austin. They have Robert Woods. They have Cooper Kupp, who they drafted, who they like. Now, Sammy Watkins is a different type of receiver, but all of those guys, I don't know what type of offense they're running out there. Sammy's more of a guy to go down the field, yep. You know, and those guys, they probably use underneath a lot more than they do Sammy going down the
I
field.
Just looked up his numbers here with the Rams. Two games, seven targets for Sammy Watkins, seven catches, 88 yards, averaging 12.6 yards per catch. His longest has been a 28-yarder, no touchdown. So he's playing. I'm not sure, you know, I mean, he's seven targets in two games, so that's 3.5 targets per game. You know, I guess we assume that he's healthy, right, that his foot's not bothering him, but I don't really have the answer to that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I haven't. They played Thursday night, though, so yep, everybody will get a chance to see him.
Here's a call from Rick in Niagara Falls. Hello, Rick. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, Murph, Donald. How are you guys doing this afternoon?
Great. Thank you.
One of the questions I had was just looking at the offense. I know you guys were talking about dropping back and having Shady right beside him. But one of the things I noticed was that Holmes, when he was lined up on the left-hand side, they were giving him quite a bit of space multiple times during the game. And I think with Tyrod dropping back, maybe that'll spread him out a little bit more. I just don't know why they didn't, you know, use him if they were giving 5-7 yards for that quick, you know, quick throw.
What do you think of that, Donald?
Say it one more time, Tyrod dropping back.
Well, just the way they had Andre Holmes lined up on the left-hand side, there wasn't enough attempts, I thought, because they were giving him 5, 7, 10 yards sometimes off the line of scrimmage. They never seemed to have, you know, a quick throw to him.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the game, they do play a little bit differently because they don't want to give up the big play. And they were backing off of Andre Holmes, and so those comebacks and those hitch routes were a little bit easier. They don't play it that way the entire course of the game. But, you know, the fact of the matter is they do need to get something going out there. And if Andre is going to be lined up by himself, you know, throw it to him. Throw him on a hitch. Throw him on a comeback. And then throw him on a stutter and go. Something like that. Just to keep these guys honest. I do think that they need to – not that they need to pass it more. They need to move guys around, though, and make sure guys are in the right spots and they use them the right way.
Thanks very much for your call, Rick. The phone line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The struggle of the Buffalo offense, the passing game, was a focus yesterday when offensive coordinator Rick Dennison met with the media after we were off the show. Dennison was asked why this offense struggles through two games to find ways to get the ball downfield to its receivers. Here's what he had to say.
I don't know that you can say it that way. That's a different statement. We haven't completed a ball, as many balls to the wide receivers. You know, we're trying to get the ball, spread the ball around, do whatever we need to do to move the ball. We didn't execute very well early on for 57 minutes. As you said, we just didn't move the ball very well. It wasn't just the wide receivers, everybody.
What do you attribute that to? Why weren't you able to move the ball as well?
Well, we didn't. They played better than we did, right? We didn't execute. It's a consistency. You watch them play after play. You know, one play we're doing well, one play we're not. So, and it's not any one person. It's us as a group. So we'll go back and they'll be corrected on the mistakes they made. We as coaches correct our mistakes, try to get a better plan going and moving forward.
Rick Dennison, yeah, he's got work to do. He knows that, acknowledges that. He was also asked yesterday, the Bills' offensive coordinator, what would it take to make this passing offense more successful moving forward? Here's his answer.
Complete a lot of balls. You know, just keep working at it, keep completing balls. I think certainly some of our shots will come off of play action and off the run game. We got to be successful there. But we can still, like I said, there's still plenty of talent and the ability to push the ball around.
Rick, where is your confidence level right now in Tyrod Taylor?
Oh, high. I'm complete confidence in him. I think he did some good things, even though he did some bad things. He did some good things, you know, managed the team, and things weren't going well, but kept us in the game. You know, some people might have gone south. He kept us all rolling. Had to move, make some plays with his feet when things weren't there. So he's coachable. That's what I think. You tell him to do something, he'll do it right. You know, he'll fix it.
Confidence from Rick Dennison, the Bills' offensive coordinator, on Tyrod Taylor. And obviously Tyrod is not off to a great start this season, but he is the best option, remains the best option. And as Sean McDermott said yesterday, he is the starting quarterback.
You know, you need to have that from your coaching staff, you know, because you don't – the last thing you want as a team, as a coaching staff, is for your coaches who, you know, ultimately as a quarterback, as a player on a team – you want for your players around you and your coaches to understand that, yeah, I might not have played good these first couple of games, but I'm going to get it together. And I need to know that you still have confidence in me, you know. And so for Tyrod, it's a good thing for Coach McDermott to say he's our guy, for Coach Dennison to say I have complete confidence in Tyrod Taylor, because he needs to know that. He needs to know that everybody still has confidence in him, regardless of what's happening in the media, what's said in the outside, and fans saying, well, Peterman needs to come in now. As long as he knows that the coaches and his players around him still have the confidence in him, he's good with that.
What's wrong with the running game? We should ask the Hall of Famer, right? Why not?
Yeah.
We'll ask Thurman Thomas. He's going to come and join us on the phones when we return. Thurman Thomas coming up next on the show. Stick around for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Big game plan today for the coaching staff here at One Bills Drive. Players' Day off on Tuesday. Buffalo looking to bounce back from the 9-3 loss to the Carolina Panthers a couple of days ago. Bills' defense has been the bright spot through the first 2 weeks of the season, only allowing one touchdown. They're ranked second in the league in defense through 2 weeks. This week's opponents, the Denver Broncos, are ranked fourth. Buffalo came out of the Carolina game with a couple of injuries. Marcel Darius with an ankle, Cordy Glenn with an ankle. Head coach Sean McDermott said yesterday he'll know more about those injuries and those players' availability as the week moves along. Back at practice tomorrow for the Bills, the Denver Broncos coming to town for the first time in 6 years. Indianapolis Colts will go another week without quarterback Andrew Luck. Coach Chuck Pagano confirming yesterday that he'll miss the Week 3 game against the Cleveland Browns. The news was expected. Luck still has yet to practice since undergoing shoulder surgery this offseason. Pagano says he's not sure whether Luck will be able to practice even this week. New York Giants comeback attempt last night in their game against Detroit derailed by what head coach Ben McAdoo called sloppy quarterback play by Eli Manning near the goal line in the third quarter. Giants were going for a touchdown on fourth and goal with just over 5 minutes left. They never got the playoff. Instead, were called for a delay of game. They lost it to the Lions 24-10. Sabres go to Penn State tonight for a preseason game at Pegula Ice Arena. They play the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight, 7 o'clock. Last night, Buffalo lost in overtime in the preseason opener against Carolina downtown at the KeyBank Center. Evan Rodriguez with two assists last night in the 3-2 loss. Jake McCabe and Seth Griffith scored for Buffalo. Robin Lehner and Linus Ullmark combined to make 25 saves. Sabres and Pittsburgh preseason game tonight. And nearly two decades after the steroid era, Major League Baseball is on track to break its season record for home runs today. And they're going to smash it. There were 5,677 home runs hit in the big leagues through Monday, 16 shy of the record set in 2000. Last year, there was an average of 2.31 home runs per game. This year's average, 2.53. That stat intrigued me, Donald. You're a baseball guy.
I'm a baseball guy. That's amazing. But I have another stat for you, and this is amazing right here. And this is on basketball side of things, and it breaks down Steph Curry's salary. You know, as he's getting paid $34.5 million this year is his basketball salary. He has to pay out $3.4 million goes into escrow, $11.6 million to federal taxes, $4.1 million to city and state taxes, almost $1 million goes to his agent, and $18,000 goes into a 401k. Imagine paying $11.6 million in federal taxes.
Do you think we should have a bake sale for him? Or what are you saying?
It's just amazing, the basketball numbers compared to football numbers.
How much do you think Steph Curry makes, well, percentage of income on the court, off the court?
Ooh.
I bet he makes more money off the court endorsements than he does now. In basketball.
Yeah,
right?
He has this new Infinity commercial.
He's got everything.
He's got a lot, you know. And then he has the Under Armour deal, which pays him a lot of money per year. He makes more money off the court than on the court. Yeah,
you feel sorry for him?
I don't feel sorry for him. I'm just saying the difference in the money in basketball over the money in football is crazy.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Definitely crazy. Here's a guy who made a couple of nickels playing pro football. He is on the line with us right now, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, from down in the New York City metropolitan area, where he is ready to tee it off soon in Joe Namath's golf tournament, his charity golf tournament. Happy to have Pro Football Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas on the line with us. Hello, Thurman. How are you?
Yeah, can you change that from nickels to pennies?
You're doing okay. Now, where is this golf tournament you're at?
It's at Best Plays Black.
Oh, wow. That's a serious course. That's a U.S. Open course.
That's a U.S. Open course, but unfortunately, the rain came and the wind came and it got canceled.
Oh.
Yeah, but we're downstairs playing poker, roulette, playing all the type of blackjack games and everything. And Joe, as Joe would be, has a nice spread for us. And just enjoying ourselves for a couple hours here and before we go back to the hotel, and that'll be it.
I don't know if you can complain. I mean, the golf got canceled, but sounds like you're still having fun.
No, you know, it's a bunch of guys that really wanted to play. I mean, this is, you know, one of the top courses in the United States, and they always want to come here and play in Joe's golf tournament. But we're all having a good time, just sitting down, kind of relaxing, telling old stories, and we're watching, like, old film. Myself and Jerome Bettis, just watching some old runs, sitting up here talking about Barry Sanders and how great he was and all the moves that he had. So, you know, just a good time for the guys just to kind of sit around and just talk about the old times.
Former Bills running back Thurman Thomas on the line with us from Joe Namath's golf tournament down in Bethpage, New York. Thurman, you're a different era player than Joe Namath. Over the years, have you had much chance to interact with him? What kind of a guy is he?
He's Joe.
Broadway Joe.
Broadway Joe. I mean, nothing has really changed about him. You know, he's still – everybody knows him. Everybody loves him. He's still, you know, got that cool voice about him. And, you know, it's just great to be down here and be a part of his tournament probably for the past couple of years. A lot of guys show up, and it's just not football players. It's basketball players, players from the NHL, Major League Baseball. So, I mean, it's guys that come to his tournament from all across the country that play different sports.
You think Susie Colbert from ESPN gets an invitation there?
Who?
Susie Colbert from ESPN. Cheap shot.
Oh my God. That's bad. John,
I know. I'm
bad.
Sorry. I love Joe Namath.
I was about to say throw some names out there for us, Thurman, but Murph just took it over with that.
I love Joe Namath, Thurman. I mean, when I was a little kid, he was in the prime of his career, and as much as Bills fans here did not like the New York Jets, I'm telling you, when the Jets won that Super Bowl III, we were celebrating here in Buffalo. That was like a seminal moment in American sports history, and he was the guy. I can't even think of a modern-day counterpart. We're talking about Steph Curry. Joe Namath was much more huge than Steph Curry ever was in terms of celebrity and just kind of being a lightning rod for the whole era. He was something else back then.
Well, if you were here at the tournament, you can obviously see that just about the number of guys that have came back to this golf tournament, number of the guys that, you know, that kind of grew up when he was playing, and all those guys are here. A lot of those guys are from the Jets teams. You got a couple of guys from the Rangers teams, from the Islanders. You know, I mean, it's just a slew of guys here that are just some guys I never even heard of, but, you know, they know how important Joe was to the city of New York and for the Jets. And it's always a great turnout, and like I said, it's for a great charity, and Joe's done an awesome job of really keeping this tournament alive, and really, you know, he comes out, he's around, he's at the parties, he's out playing golf, he's visible around, you know, during his golf tournament, which is, I think, everybody's, you know, when he walks in a room, you know, everybody pays attention to who he is.
So who are the celebrities there that you're most excited to talk to this week, today?
I got to talk to Vida Blue.
Oh, yeah.
Pitcher? Yeah. Vida Blue. Pudge Rodriguez.
Hmm. Hall of Famer?
Johnny Damon. Got to talk to Brian Trottier for the
Islanders. Yeah, Brian Trottier, yeah.
Got a chance to talk to him for a little bit. Rick Barry.
Rick Barry?
Basketball player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hall of Famer,
Byron Scott, Artis Gilmore. It's just a whole bunch of guys here.
You know, Thurm, I often wonder, because you are around so many celebrities on a regular basis, is there still a celebrity that you haven't met yet that you would be starstruck when you meet?
Oh, man. I think it's a whole bunch of them. I never met Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant. It's a whole bunch of them. You know, probably more basketball than anything.
Yeah.
There's still guys out there that, you know, I would love to meet, that are star players that in a lot of sports. So, it's still a great thing for me to come to these things and see some of the players that I watched grew up and that are watching today. It's always a thrill for me just to meet those guys and introduce myself. So, coming to tournaments like this is always a great thing for me.
Talking celebrities with Bill's.
And plus, I know John likes to, he likes me to hear me name drop on everybody.
I do. You're like our TMZ correspondent. I want to know the latest celebrity dirt because I know you'll find it. I love hearing it. It's unbelievable. I live vicariously through your interactions with celebrities. I think it's fantastic. I want to grow up to be Thurman Thomas someday. Thurman Thomas, a Hall of Fame running back, on the line with us. Let's talk a little football, Thurman, and the Bills' miserable offensive performance down in Carolina. It starts first and foremost with their inability to get anything going on in the run game, which is their bread and butter. What did you see and what did you think about their lackluster offense Sunday?
Well, just like everybody's been saying, John, it was just not a good performance by the offense. And I think that as players, that. I've been in some games where, we haven't did anything on the offensive side of the ball. But at the end, still having kind of an opportunity to win a football game, man. But I think, when you're talking about this Bills offense, they put in the two tight ends, fullback, and one wide receiver. And I think that's kind of playing into – kind of played into the Carolina's defense. That's what they wanted to do. I think with the defense as quick as they are and, whereby Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly, got to spread those guys out. And, I'm not the offensive coordinator, Rick Dennison is, but it was just not a good performance. And hopefully they can bounce back. It's going to be even tougher for them next week against the Denver Broncos. They got really two really good corners and, Chris Harris Jr. and Tlaib. So, it's going to be another type game where, those corners are going to be up probably pressing those wide receivers. But it was just not a good performance. And hopefully guys are upset that they didn't really help their defense out and hopefully be able to come out and put on a better show this coming Sunday against the Broncos.
Hey, Thurm, how frustrating is it was it for you and is it for a guy like LeSean McCoy, guys who are so talented at rushing the ball? And you can make things happen yourself, but you can't do it all yourself. And how frustrating is it when you constantly get the handoff and there are guys playing on your side, playing in the backfield, and you're getting tackled right away?
Well, you know what? I think it's a little bit different from, myself and LeSean. There were times where the rushing yards weren't there. And having a guy like Jim, Jim would be like, we're not rushing the ball very, very well today. So, I'm going to use you more in the passing game. Mm-hmm. Put you out to wide receiver, put you out in the slot. It can be frustrating, especially, since the last 2 years and going into the second week of the season, and they were the leading rushing team in the National Football League. And when you take away that, I saw a couple of times where LeSean got hit in the backfield or whatever, kind of threw the ball down. I sense some frustration there, but I think as an offensive group, offensive line, they probably take that to heart and, hopefully they'll come out and do a better show in, next week against Denver, because they're going to be another tough defense that they're going to have to go against.
How do you think LeSean McCoy reacts to that game, Thurman? And, as you said, you're different style of running back and a much different offense that you played in. But an elite-level back like the way you were and the way LeSean McCoy is, what's your mindset after a game like that?
I had such a great relationship, with the offensive guys on the football, on the offensive side and the offensive line that, you know, I would be like, hey, guys, you know, we got to do better than that. And I'm sure he's probably doing the same thing. And I'm sure the offensive linemen are probably doing this, saying the same thing to him. We have to be better as a football team. We have to be able to run the football week in and week out. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be, you know, they're going to have a great practice week. I have no doubt that this offensive line will get back on track. Because, like I said, it's very frustrating knowing that you can run the football and play a game like that and your leading rusher has, what, 8 yards, 11 mm-hmm. yards? And, you know, that's kind of a shot to all of them on the offensive side of the ball, the offensive lineman and the running back. So, yeah, you know what? You just come back. You're 1-1, right at the top of the division. You're playing an AFC team that's very, very talented. And, you know, you get mad and you get pissed off about it, and you want to do something about it the following week.
Throughout the course of a game, now, we know how, Durham, you know how, you know, wide receivers are. At least, you know, the ones that I played with, we were always in the coordinator's ear and the quarterback's ear, like, hey, man, it's open. Just throw it to me. Throughout the course of the game, or at least you're going over there saying, look, this is not working, but this is something I see, so we can do this. Is LeSean McCoy, throughout the course of the game, in your mindset, is he going to Coach Dennison and to Tyrod Taylor saying, look, this is not working. We got to do this. Because when you're on the field, you can see things that, you know, the coach might not be able to see from the sideline.
Well, you know what, Donald, I think as a player, and LeSean being in the National Football League for his 9th year, I would think that he would have a conversation with Coach Dennison. I think, you know, if you have that type of player that has been in the league for a long time, you know, and don't take it as a bad thing. Take it as a good relationship that mm-hmm. you should have with your offensive coordinator of going to talk to him and going to see, you know, things when you're out on the field that you can go back and tell him. You know, I think that's good for an offensive team, especially good for your star player. I mean, if he can't go and, you know, talk to an offensive coordinator saying, you know, well, let's try this or let's try that because this isn't working, I think that's a good thing. And I would hope that a guy as talented as LeSean McCoy would go over and talk to his offensive coordinator, hey, maybe this play will work and maybe this play will work better for us. So, yeah, I hope that – I think that's a good thing, and he should have that relationship with his offensive coordinator.
Hey, Thurman, there's a lot of people talking this week, obviously, with the Bills' failure to run the ball about, you know, the offensive line scheme. They're more of a, you know, a zone type of offensive line blocking scheme now compared to where they've been. When you played, what did you guys do well up front? I mean, what kind of a offensive line scheme did you have? What did that group, including – you know, Jim Richer, who is a great athlete, and Will Wolford and Ken Hall.
Yeah.
What did that group do best, do you think, up front of you?
Well, you know what? The only thing that they did, you know what, John, they worked hard. They were very smart, very intelligent. And, you know, we didn't do a lot. I mean, we did a little bit of, you know, pulling with the guard and tackle, but most of the stuff that we did, John, was smash mouth football.
Yeah.
You know, we blocked the guys right up front, and I picked a hole, and my coach, Elijah Pitt, said, you know what, Thurm? We may not be able to block all of them, but it's your responsibility to try to make one of them miss.
Right.
And so when you have that type of attitude, you know, just go at it. And, yeah, I mean, that was the best thing for us. You know, we didn't care what type of defense you were in. We didn't care what type of formation we were in. We had a bread-and-butter play, and we're going to run it. No matter if you had 7 or 8 guys in the box, we're going to find a way to get it done. And, yeah, I'm sure – yeah, the offensive linemen, they're going to be upset about hearing all the criticism, how they didn't run the ball there very well. So, like I said earlier, you know, I expect those guys to come out and have a great game against Denver.
Yeah, they should come out and have a great game against Denver. Thurm, throughout the course of the game, I kept thinking to myself, maybe they'll put LeSean McCoy in the slot now. You know, maybe they'll go 5 wide just to try and spread him out and get the ball to LeSean McCoy that way and Charles Clay that way. And just so you can spread guys out, you still want to get the ball into the hands of your playmakers, but sometimes you got to – do it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? And I think, you know, as they keep learning this offense, they keep getting better and better, keep getting more reps, keep getting more practices. You know, I mean, this is Rick Dennison here, the first year he's been here as an offensive coordinator. So I'm pretty sure he's kind of probably still trying to fill out, you know, what's best for this team and what's best position to put LeSean McCoy in. But, you know, he's your best offensive weapon. He should be all over the field, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago. But the 27 touches, well, yeah, he should be getting those type of touches, whether it's running the football or catching the ball coming out of the backfield or lining up as a wide receiver. So you do whatever you can to get your best players in involved, in which I think LeSean is, and also Charles Clay. You get those two guys involved, and it makes your offense a whole lot better.
Hey, Thurman, thanks for this. Is Joe Namath walking around there in that, like, full-length white mink coat? I hope so. That's the image I have of him at that golf tournament, anyway.
No, he's not walking around. I'm actually upstairs in a little conference room. It was too much noise downstairs, you know. You had Bruce on one side. You had Andre on the other side. You know, Jerome Bettis. You know, you got all these guys. So, yeah, I had to come somewhere where it was more quiet. Well, but I tell Joe you said hi, though.
Would you? I interviewed him once. He won't remember it, but it was really a highlight for me because I loved that guy growing up. I thought he was everything. He was it, man.
He interviewed him right before the Susie Colbert thing.
Yeah, Joe didn't want to. Joe didn't ask me if he could kiss me.
Well, you guys are something.
Thanks, Thurman.
All right, man. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Fame running back, Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Bills' all-time leading rusher, makes a weekly appearance with us when he can work it into his busy social calendar. The guy's unbelievable. And you asked him, you know, what celebrities he wants to meet, and it occurred to me as he went down the list, he virtually has met everybody he wants to meet.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
He's been around every celebrity you could name.
Everybody he named is like new guys.
Yeah.
You know, whereas
yeah.
like everybody yeah. else, you know, from his era, he's met everybody.
The guys he named want to meet him.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. It's funny.
He's, you know, music. Neil Young, he's talked to us about his encounter with Mick Jagger. I mean, the guy's been all over the place. We live vicariously through Thurman Thomas and his rush with greatness. That's all I can do. He travels in those circles. We don't. Hey, want to get some thoughts from you on this Buffalo defense. That's the topic of the day as we move through the day here, the Buffalo defense. Who gets the most credit for what the Bills have been able to do defensively? Second in the league on defense right now. Where does that credit go? What do you think? It's only 2 weeks. We know that. But who gets the most credit for the Bills' strong start on defense? That is our Twitter poll. It is up right now. And more than 2,500 votes in so far. Almost half of you, 48%, say the coaching staff. New head coach Sean McDermott, new defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier get most of the credit. 24% say the defensive backs, Jordan Poyer in that group. 24% also say the defensive front, Lorenzo Alexander, Kyle Williams, et cetera. 4% have somebody else in mind. Phone lines are open if you'd like to weigh in on this. 803-0550, the number. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Thurman expressing Donald's, now switching to the offensive side, Thurman expressing pretty much confidence that the Bills will bounce back. He said, I have no doubt the offensive line will get back on track. It has to happen. And I think they will, too. It's a veteran group. It's not like their confidence is going to be shaken by
this. This is definitely a veteran group. This is the same group that led you the last couple of years, for the most part, that led you the last couple of years to number one rushing attack, right? So, you know, I think that they will look at this thing and they are going to be upset when they hear everybody in the media and everybody on their social media and all of that stuff coming at them about you guys didn't play well. You know, you weren't able to run the ball. How come you're not able to run the ball? And anytime you're not able to run the ball, the offensive linemen, they take that to heart. And, you know, they should, because they didn't really play well. So, yeah, I expect them to come. They're going to go look at the film, which they've already done, look at the film, and then start getting prepared for this upcoming week, because they have another tough challenge coming up here. And they know that, look, we weren't good in technique. We didn't drive off the ball like we should. This week they're going to come out hyped up at home. I think I expect them to have a better game.
Well, I'm just going to say, would it make a difference to an offensive line or to an offense in general to be at home in front of, you know, a crowd that will back them up? What do you think?
You know, if you remember throughout the course of the game, and I kept watching this because I kept seeing Jordan Mills tap Eric Wood on his leg. And that just goes to show, when you're on the road, even though it might not – you guys are telling me it wasn't that loud in the stadium. But when you're on the road and, you know, the crowd is trying to make some noise – sometimes you do now have to overthink things, you know, because you have everything is on hand signals and you have so much going on. And so being at home, it will be quiet for this offensive line. They'll be able to call everything out whenever, you know, they'll call it. Everybody can hear it. So I think, being at home is a little bit different. Plus, you just have the hype of, I'm home. I'm at home. I feel good. Let's get it going. I don't know what the weather is looking like. When I looked at my thing, it was like a bunch of sunny days in a row. I think it's going to be sunny on Sunday. I think they're going to feel good about it.
What do you think about the Bills' run game, how to get going? What do you think about the Bills' defensive success so far? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Leroy in Buffalo has some thoughts on the defense. Leroy, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
How you doing, gentlemen? Thanks good. For taking my call.
Sure.
And I understand what everyone said about Leslie Frazier, but I have Preston Brown because, you know, that linebacker make all the calls and you know, even watching the game and him in the right positions and putting his other players in the right position. So I give it to Preston Brown.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll definitely see you there. I understand where you're going with that because the middle linebacker is, I guess, the quarterback of the defense. He does have to get the play call in. Get it out to everybody. Make sure that, you know, everybody is in the right spot. You will see Preston Brown come up to, you know, from his linebacker position. He'll come up and tap one of the defensive linemen on, you know, on their backside and, hey, move over to this gap or something like that. He has a lot on his plate as well. So, yeah, he has everybody in the right spot, and those guys are making plays.
You know what else I see from a fundamental standpoint on this defense through two games and
tackling.
Tackling. How'd you know I was going to say that?
Because we didn't see it last year.
Right. The contrast. I mean, I'm trying to think. How many missed tackles in the first two games of the year? Had there been one, maybe two?
Right.
There was a Cam Newton whiff, I think, this past mm-hmm. week. And somebody, I think, missed on Kelvin Benjamin, I want to say, after a catch. But they've really done a really good job of wrapping up fundamentals.
Right. I keep saying this. The guys on the other team get paid, too.
Sure.
You know, and those guys are superstars. They are good. You know, they will make you miss a tackle or two, but you don't want to see that. Last year was a consistent thing. It sometimes looked like guys didn't even want to make tackles, you know. And so this year you see both guys wrapping up and tackling, but you also see consistently every play you see them stripping at the ball.
Yeah.
You know, like you can see it. Like, oh, man, they're trying to get the ball. And the Panthers did a good job of holding on to the ball, but you can see the Bills trying to get
that
ball.
Didn't get any. That hurt.
Right, yeah.
And there was chances.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I went back and watched the second half last night and saw chances to get takeaways. That would in a game where there, you know, that was close margin of victory.
You need a takeaway.
Yeah. And you know what else I saw again was the near block punt by Ryan Davis.
Yeah.
You imagine?
You saw him jump up.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, they always teach. They always teach you. And I remember I did this, Cardinals sin. I did this on my rookie year in the preseason. I come off the edge, and I put my hands up. And they always tell you, when you block a punt, put your hands down, and you go right through his foot.
Yeah.
You don't run into him, but you take the ball right off of his foot. If you do that, you'll block it. If you go up and you jump, you'll miss it a lot of the time.
Again, I don't know how many games. I said this yesterday. The Bills might win 4 games. They might win 8 games. They might win 10, 11 games. I do have a feeling that loss yesterday is going to leave a mark.
Yeah.
Just because it was so close and waiting to be won, waiting to be snatched away, and they just couldn't do it.
And they'll learn.
Yeah.
They'll learn.
I hope
it.
So.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to break. We've got a lot coming up in the next segment. We hope you come back for that, including a check-in with the unit's blood drive going on across the parking lot, the Upstate New York Transplant Services. Preston Brown is over there. And we're going to check in on that along with our very own Lauren Hall. Plus, fake news, real news coming up in the next segment as well. Come on back. The John Murphy Show presented by NEPA Auto Parts. Live at One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. We're live at One Bills Drive talking about the Buffalo defense primarily, the Bills defense, but we'll talk about whatever you'd like. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550.
You were eating crackers?
I was. Can you tell?
I can
have
smell
any on me?
No, you don't have them on you.
You can smell them. Now, hey, Trey Wingo is going to stop by at 2 o'clock on the phone anyway from ESPN. He's our regular Tuesday visitor, the host of ESPN's NFL Live. We can cover a lot of territory with him on the rest of the league. We'd like to broaden our horizons, Donald, and he's a good guy to do it. He knows a lot about the league.
He does know a lot about the league. Last week when we talked to him, he was able to bounce around a lot, you know, so I expect him to be the same way this week.
Let's test him this week.
All right.
Let's see how many teams we can throw at him.
Yeah, exactly.
Trey Wingo coming up at 2 o'clock at 2:30. Rich Robbins, the head coach of the Canisius High School football team. They're coming here to Orchard Park right here at New Era Field Friday night, 7 o'clock, to play St. Joe's. Donald will have the call of the game on MSG along with Chris Brown. One game under your belt, another one to come.
This is a big one. this is the big rivalry, I guess, of this area, you know. And so, yeah, one of them. So I look forward to it. I'm looking forward to it.
You should. Time now for Fake News, Real News. It is presented by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Donald and I look at the news in the NFL, try to determine what's for real and what's fake. Then basically we just kind of, and our producer Jay Harris does this too, kind of comb the internet, see what's out there, what kind of reporting is out there. Look, the New Orleans Saints, tough loss to New England the other day. There's an article here from USA Today. Time for the Saints to move on from Sean Payton and Drew Brees. The author, Stephen Ruiz, says, watching a Saints game is like watching an arena football team. Plenty of scoring, but it just feels cheap, he says. The defense has been a problem. Did you know this? He's talking about Sean Payton and how undisciplined they are. I didn't know this. On the very first snap of the season this year, the Saints had 10 men on the field. That would be like a red light, right? That would be like,
I don't mean to laugh, but the very first snap of the season. Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah, that's not good at all. I'll go with this one, though. I'll say fake. They don't need to move. Well, they definitely don't need to move on from Drew Brees because he still can get it done.
Yeah.
But they need to get a defense, and that's always been their issue. They do not have a defense. They can score points, but they can't stop anybody. And that is not a recipe for if you want to win Super Bowls and if you want to win consistently, because as soon as a defense can slow you down a little bit, you're going to lose, you know. So fake. No, they don't need to move on from Drew Brees, at least. Maybe Sean Payton, because he hasn't. He and the GM have not been able to put a solid defense around them.
Well, and Payton goes through coordinators, too, on the defensive side of the ball, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's gone through a bunch of them and can't find the answer, apparently. I think he has to answer for that. The Saints have gone 7-9, three consecutive seasons. Some people, this writer says, Payton has replaced Jeff Fisher as the league's model of mediocre consistency. So now they're 0-2, and they go to Carolina next week. And then three straight games against playoff teams. Let's revisit this in a couple of weeks. But time now for the Saints to move on from Sean Payton and Drew Brees. I say fake as well. In a couple of weeks, get back to me. Certainly, I don't, you know, you don't hustle a guy like Drew Brees out there.
No, because he's still getting it done.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer.
Right, exactly.
You don't just give him the bums rush.
But the coach and, you know, the general manager up in the front office, they have to get a good defense out there. They're like the Colts. You know, they just haven't been able to get a good defense.
Let's revisit the coach in a couple of weeks. All right, item number two, fake news, real news, and this comes on the heels of the Giants' sorry performance last night in Monday Night Football against Detroit. The Giants made a mistake by hiring Ben McAdoo as their head coach. That was a note that appeared on Yahoo.com. Tough loss yesterday. McAdoo replaced Tom Coughlin as head coach. McAdoo had been their offensive coordinator. 18 regular season games into his Giants tenure now. His offense one of the first and worst in football. They are 0-2. They did have a good year last year, but it's off to a bad start. They have offensive line issues with Eric Flowers. We'll talk with Trey Wingo about that. I was surprised today to read that Ben McAdoo, in a sense, threw Eli Manning under the bus for that delay of game penalty. That's not a good sign. But they made a mistake by hiring Ben McAdoo. Let's pump the brakes on this one, too. I think it's fake. The Giants are certainly trending in the wrong direction, but I don't believe you should fire head coaches after a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm going to say fake on this as well. Last year, they had a good season. You know, they
11-5.
Right, 11-5 last year. This year, they haven't gotten off to a good start, and that's something that they need to do. But it's not like the rest of the NFC East is 2-0. Yeah. You know, so they will be fine. They just have to, you know, correct some things and get better moving forward. I expect for the problem is the offensive line. You know, and we're going to see that, and maybe we'll talk to Trey Wingo about that. But offensive line on that team, and we saw it with the Bills last week, and across the league, these offensive lines are just not playing that well. So they need to do a better job of keeping Eli Manning upright. But, no, I don't think they made a mistake by hiring Ben McAdoo.
And finally, in fake news, real news, the Chicago Bears need to switch out quarterbacks. They've got Mitchell Trubisky, the number two overall draft pick this year, waiting in the wings. Of course, they've gone with Mike Glennett. Is it time for a quarterback change in Chicago after 2 weeks? I'm going to go fake on this one, Donald, again, too early. You know, I mean, this is classic overreaction after a couple of games. Glennon was okay in week one, and they almost knocked off Atlanta in week one. This past week, he was bad. Three turnovers this past week in Tampa Bay. But I'm not a big believer in Mike Glennon, but I think for the sake of making sure that you just don't throw Mitch Trubisky to the Wolves. By the way, he's a guy who has not played a lot of football in his college career. I would say hold off on this. Bears need a quarterback change. I'm saying fake right now.
And I know everybody out in now he made some bad plays. Mike Glennon threw some horrible passes. One that got picked and went all the way to the house. It was like, where are you throwing the ball to? But at the same time, their offensive line, once again, could not block Tampa Bay's defensive front. And if you can't block up front, you definitely don't want to put your rookie quarterback in there because it can stunt his growth all the way. You know, it can help him, but I think it will stunt his growth, and he will be just totally terrified out there on the field, confused, totally confused, and all he's worried about is the guys up front can't block me. So, no, I think this is fake. I don't think that they need a quarterback change right now. You got to continue to watch this, obviously, but I don't think they need to put Mitchell Trubisky in there right now because their problems are up front on the offensive line.
I need someone, and I'm sure there's evidence out there, but someone has to point out to me a situation where a rookie quarterback got thrown in early in a season and went on to have a great career. And what comes to my mind is Dan Marino. I think that was almost midseason in 1983 when he got his first start against the Bills. I can look that up easily, but mm-hmm. You know it's hard to think of a guy, even a highly drafted rookie, who was just thrown in there almost in a panic move early in his rookie year and succeeded, thrived. I think typically they go the other way.
Yeah, and when you throw him in there in a panic move, it's because your team is not playing good. There are a lot of different issues around him. You know, Dak Prescott last year, he wasn't that high of a draft pick, but last year he had a solid team around him. You can look at it as a panic move because Romo got hurt, but Romo got hurt, you know. It wasn't like, man, we suck right now. Let's make a quarterback change. Hopefully he can change things up for us. No, that's what you're talking about in Chicago. We're not playing good. We need to do something for this rookie to give us a spark. And now you throw a rookie in there, and he can't do anything either because he's getting hit in his mouth left and right, you know, and so that will totally stunt his growth, and it will set their franchise back a few years because he's the guy that you traded up and gave away a lot to get in the first round. You traded up one pick that gave away a lot to get Mitchell Trubisky, and now you stunt his growth. That can totally set your franchise back. Keep Mike Glennon in there right now.
Yeah, I think so too. I just looked up. Marino started week 6 in his rookie year. Went on to the Hall of Fame, obviously. But I just think you can damage a young quarterback if you throw him in there too soon.
So.
And I think that what might be going on right there. Fake news, real news, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Thanks for playing along with us at home. Hey, we'd love to hear from you today as we talk about the Buffalo defense. Who gets most of the credit for the way the Bills defense has performed through these first 2 weeks? It's our Twitter poll. You could say the coaching staff. You could say the defensive front. You could say the defensive backfield. Maybe you got somebody else in mind. Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550 to discuss that. One of the key members of the Buffalo Bills defense is busy today, involved in the unit's blood drive, the Upstate New York Transplant Services blood drive, which is going on as we speak right across the parking lot over at the stadium here at New Era Field. And Lauren Hall is standing by to update us on how that blood drive is going. Let's send it to Lauren Hall.
Hey, Mervin Donald from across the parking lot here at New Era Field. We are inside the Paul McGuire Club right now, where all day long the unit's Buffalo Bills blood drive is taking place. So we have already had a line out the door this morning. We have more than 170 Bills fans registered for appointments today to come quickly give some blood, help save some lives here in Western New York, and have some fun experiences while they're here. You can hear the music blaring. There's already a kind of a party atmosphere going. Every fan who gives blood today and throughout the rest of the week here for units will be registered to win one of 100 pairs of tickets to that Denver game coming up this Sunday here at New Era Field. And if you come down, you might even meet a current Buffalo Bill, like who's here right now, or a good buddy, Preston Brown. We're also going to have some other alumni here. But what's up, Preston?
I'm doing good. It's an off day, so kind of relaxing to come out here for the units blood drive. It's a great event. You can help save lives in the Western New York area, and you can win tickets to the game. So it's a pretty good event, so you should come down and see how it is.
And you know, on Sunday, this place is going to be absolutely rocking. The temperature is still going to be nice and hot, another summer-like atmosphere here.
Definitely. The hot's coming out of nowhere. I don't know why it's so hot.
But yeah, you're not a fan of that. The fans like it. You'd probably rather have it a couple degrees cooler.
I'm a fan of the colder games. I thought Buffalo would be 60 right now, but I'll take the 85, 90. But it's going to be a fun time out there. Go out there, big win against the Broncos.
And Preston, this is your day off, but you don't really take any days off, do you? You probably, did you work out yet, I'm sure?
Yeah, I worked out this morning and then came straight over here to, for a great event. A lot of great people out here, and it's fun interacting with people.
Such a good community guy. Every Tuesday, it seems like you're out doing something.
Yeah, I love giving back to the community. It's such a great atmosphere in the whole city. So just being out, communicating with fans is just fun for me.
All right, and he signed a lot of autographs, so he's going to be here for a little bit longer this afternoon as soon as he leaves. Again, more Bills alumni will be here throughout the day. So, Preston, thanks again.
Thank you.
And we're going to bring in Sarah Dina right now. Sarah, what did I miss? Again, Units Blood Drive goes till 7 today at New Era Field. Who else is coming after Preston?
We'll have Steve Tasker here, Booker Edgerson, Billy Buffalo. We have DJ Milk here now. He'll be back later tonight. So it's an awesome event for a great cause. We want everyone to come down.
And if you can't come today, you can go to one of your neighborhood blood donation centers. Where are those locations?
Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, you can donate at our centers at the Southgate Plaza, Eastern Hills Mall, our units headquarters on Broadway, and in Tonawanda. All the information is on our website, units.org/teamunits. We encourage everyone to donate.
And if you haven't donated before, this is what you do today. Just come to New Era Field in Orchard Park, park in Gate 2, go right into the Paul McGuire Club. You'll see the security guards waving you in. You'll see the signage. You just have to, if you don't have an appointment, you can walk up. You just have to fill out a little bit of information about yourself, go through a quick health screening, and then once all that's done, how long does it take to get that blood taken?
Actually, donating is usually less than 10 minutes long. You're here for less than an hour altogether. And again, this is a fun event, so it'll be awesome.
All right, so we hope to see you here. If you have any information or if you have any questions, need any more information about the Buffalo Bills units, blood drives, and how you can help us save lives here in Western New York and possibly win those tickets to our Denver game coming up this Sunday right here, just go to units.org/teamunits. Sarah, anything else?
I think that's it. We just hope everyone comes down.
All right, thanks so much. Murph and Donald, back to you.
Okay, Lauren Hall, thanks very much over at the Paul McGuire Club at New Era Field for the units. Blood drive goes on until 7 o'clock tonight. Mm-hmm. Preston Brown there for a little while longer. Pretty cool. Looks like a lot of people having fun over there.
Yeah, it looked like it.
Yeah.
Preston is too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's a good guy. Hey, coming up, we're going to talk more about this Buffalo defense, what's gone well. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to talk with Trey Wingo of ESPN. So come on back for that. Our New York State Lottery inside the numbers. We do this every Tuesday. The Bills with those 6 sacks against Carolina, the most they've had since November 2014. They had 7 sacks against the Jets. And the 6 sacks for the Bills Sunday, they're most in a road game since they got 6 in Detroit at Ford Field back in October 2014. By the way, the last time the Bills played Carolina, September 2013, they also had 6 sacks on Cam Newton, Mario Williams with 4.5. The New York State Lottery inside the numbers. Take a break from the expected, play scratch-off games from the New York Lottery. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're just rolling along here on a Tuesday. Now, yesterday's show seemed like it sort of dragged. Today seems like we're flying along, Donald. What is that?
You know, I don't know. I mean, we do have some shows where it's like, man, this is moving slow. But
most of those shows
days
between June and training camp felt like that.
Yeah.
The end of. But now, no, I think we're moving along here. We got Trey Wingo coming up at 2 o'clock from ESPN. Mm-hmm. We've got Rich Robbins, the head coach at Canisius High School football, coming up at 2:30. Plus, plenty of interaction with you. Plenty of time to do that on the phones at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. Got Dwayne calling from the Keystone State, Pennsylvania. Where in Pennsylvania are you, Dwayne?
I'm in Collegeville, John.
Collegeville? Where's that?
That's right outside King of Prussia.
Outside what?
Right outside of King of Prussia.
King of Prussia. Okay. Where I kind of know where that is. It's middle of the state somewhere, right?
Yeah, right. Like probably like 45 minutes outside of Philadelphia.
Okay, I got you. Oh, okay. I know where you are. What's up, Dwayne? How you doing today?
Well, not too good. You know, Maria is about to hit my homeland after Irma already devastated my homeland, so I haven't really been able to keep up with you guys.
Puerto Rico, huh? Yeah. We're all saying our prayers for Puerto Rico. That sounds bad.
Actually, you know.
Oh, Virgin Islands. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So a lifelong Buffalo Bills fan. I caught a couple of segments last week, and I noticed a lot of callers are worrying about, like, wins and quarterback play and for me, with the new regime change, I'm kind of excited to see that there are less penalties.
Yeah.
Jerry Hughes is under control. I can see the foundation that Sean McDermott is building. And I'm just in patient mode. I mean, I've been patient my whole life, but I'm kind of just excited to see the defense playing the way they're playing. I'd like to see them get rid of Darius' contract. I like the way they rotate the defensive line. So I'm more on the optimistic side in the future, but I'm young. I'm 33, so I probably got like 10 more years before I get frustrated.
Hopefully you won't be put to the test for 10 more
years.
10 years.
Jeez.
Hey, you mentioned Jerry Hughes. There was a moment in Sunday's game where the Bills made a good defensive play. Hughes in on a tackle, I believe, on Jonathan Stewart, and a flag came out end of the play. And upstairs, calling the game, I thought, here we go again. Jerry did something again.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't on him. It was on Stewart, delay of game for spiking
right.
the ball. I thought,
I saw him actually spike it. I knew exactly what it was. You were up in the booth, so you probably might not have. But I saw it on TV. He spiked it, and then everybody put their hands up. And I'm like, that's a delay of game. You can't spike the ball. So
and it was Jerry Hughes who called it out to the official.
Yeah.
He knew.
No, Jerry is happy. Last year, I think he really was just frustrated with everything that was going on, you know, and when guys are frustrated, and I know fans don't want to hear this, it's like, well, it's your job to come to work and work, and I get that. But, you know, he just was frustrated last year, and he wasn't happy at all, you know. And so you saw those frustrations out on the field, and it came in form of penalties and things like that. This year he is totally different. And this team is totally different, in my opinion, from the preseason. And that was something we were talking about every game in the preseason, penalties. We get so many penalties. You've gotten into the regular season, knock on some wood, but we haven't really had that issue in the game.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that was preseason, you know, guys playing or not going to play. Let's work in a call here from Edric in New Jersey, a close follower of the Bills. Edric, how are you?
Hey, John. Hey, what's up, Donald?
What's up?
I didn't get a chance to call yesterday. I wanted to make a comment about, you know, the offense played bad, and that's for sure, but I don't think we'll go against a defense that can stay in base like the Panthers can, and keep those linebackers in there and be able to defend their best two weapons in the passing game, which is Clay and McCoy. And then they can stop the run, staying in that base defense. That's not going to happen too often this year. Again, our offense played pretty bad. But when you can stay in base like they did and take away our biggest weapon, we're going to have trouble because, quite frankly, our wide receivers right now are not winning on the outside.
Mm.
So, unfortunately, that's one thing. And another thing I wanted to make, John, I called and commented about Cam Newton. And I just think watching him on Sunday, you've been a starter for 7 years, and you have two delayed games playing at home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. I mean, you see what I mean? I mean, I hate to bash on him, but I mean, come on. I mean, we lost. He made the plays that he had to at the end to drive his team down and win the game. But, again, not impressed. Hopefully this week we go out and we can get a W against Denver. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Edric, you know, I hope that this week they can go out and get a W. On offense, they're going to have to, number one, establish that run game. But they're going to need to pass the ball as well because Denver is going to stack the box. Unfortunately, you're going against probably the best trio of DBs in the league, and Aqib Talib is fourth in NFL history. Within 10 interception for return touchdowns. So fourth in league history, he has 10 INTs for touchdown. He had one last week for like 103 yards against the Cowboys. If the wide receivers can't get separation, it is going to be a problem for Tyrod and this offense.
All right, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour. When we return, we're going to be talking with Trey Wingo from ESPN. He is the host of ESPN's NFL Live. We'll get his view on the Bills' predicament, his view on their opponents, the Denver Broncos, and the rest of the NFL. Trey Wingo from ESPN standing by to join us on the show when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Bills coaches involved in the big game plan day as they get set for the game coming up this Sunday here at One Bills Drive. The players off on Tuesday. Buffalo trying to bounce back from the 9-3 loss in Carolina a couple of days ago. The defense, the bright spot through the first portion of the season. They've only allowed one touchdown. Bills ranked second in defense around the league through 2 weeks. This week's opponents, by the way, the Denver Broncos are ranked fourth. Buffalo with a couple of injuries to keep an eye on. Marcell Dareus on the defensive line. Cordy Glenn on the offensive line. Head coach Sean McDermott said yesterday he'll know more as the week moves along. Bills return to practice tomorrow with the Broncos coming to town this Sunday. First time they played here in 6 years. The Indianapolis Colts still going to be without Andrew Luck. He's been ruled out of their week 3 game against the Cleveland Browns. The news was expected. Luck has even yet to practice with the Indianapolis Colts so far. So Indy moves ahead with Jacoby Brissett set to make his second start for the Colts. The Giants tried to come back last night in their loss, their 24-10 loss against Detroit at East Rutherford. But Ben McAdoo blames sloppy quarterback play on their failure to get a play off in time. They took a delay of game penalty that forced him to settle for a field goal. Ben McAdoo says it was sloppy quarterback play. Quarterback and center need to be on the same page. Sabres are at Penn State getting set for preseason game number two tonight. They'll play it against the Pittsburgh Penguins at the Pagula Ice Arena in Happy Valley. 7 o'clock faceoff. Last night, Buffalo lost in overtime the preseason opener 3-2 to Carolina. That game at KeyBank Center. And Evan Rodriguez had 2 assists last night for Buffalo. And tonight, Major League Baseball is on track to break its season record for home runs. Not just top it, but smash it. There were 5,677 home runs hit in Big League Baseball through last night, 16 shy of the record set back in the steroid era back in 2000. Major League Baseball averaging 2.53 home runs per game now. Last year it was 2.31. That's the update from One Bills Drive.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it.
Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod Brooks.
Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown!
There's T-Mobile into the end zone.
Boy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Back live at One Bills Drive for hour number 3 of the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline by a regular Tuesday visitor for us now. He is the host of ESPN's NFL Live. Happy to have Trey Wingo on the line. Trey, John Murphy and Donald Jones, thanks for joining us here today.
John, Donald, what's going on, guys?
Oh, nothing. You know, still recovering from Sunday's Bills loss. You know, it strikes me, Trey, we've had, we're only 2 weeks into the season, and I hate sweeping generalizations like this, but there's an awful lot of bad football teams in the NFL right now. Do you agree?
Well, look, there's a lot of bad offenses for sure. I mean, that's the one thing that's sort of crept up there. And there's all these theories as to why offenses are struggling. There's a couple of reasons that I think are really important. Number one is that offensive line play is down across the league. There's no question about that. So the question then becomes, why is offensive line play down across the NFL? And I think you can point to three reasons, really. Number one, you can only bring in what somebody is giving you. So what the college teams are doing, most college teams now are basically playing a glorified a version of a spread offense, which means a majority of the time those offensive linemen are in two-point stances, not three-point stances. So the blocking schemes that they're asked to do in college are completely different than what they're asked to do in the NFL. And that means you have to teach these guys a brand-new way blocking, for the most part, coming in. So that's part of it. Number two, the new CBA, which is, I think, in many ways very beneficial for the players because it does cut down on padded practices, and they have seen an increase in revenues and salaries coming their way, which is great, but it does cut down on time to play together, especially in drills where you're hitting. And the only way offensive line play gets better, because it's the most interdependent unit in a football team, is by working together in unison doing that. So I think those are the two really big things as to why offensive lines are struggling. And look, you can have all the weapons you want, like the Giants, for example, on Monday night. But if you can't block, it doesn't matter. And I think a lot of people are finally getting to understanding that realization that if you can't block, you really can't win.
Much of that applies to the Buffalo Bills, I think, and their struggles on offense this past Sunday in Carolina. Just give me your thoughts on Buffalo's offensive struggles. Some people think, based on some of the departures from the Bills' offense, that kind of performance was somewhat predictable, expected. What do you think, Trey?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, you lost a bunch of receivers this offseason, and, you know, the guys you're trying to replace them with have yet to step up, which is not to say that they can't. Look, the one thing that we do this segment on Monday on NFL Live, we've done it for years, called Overreaction Monday, because everybody sees something that happens in the game on Sunday and automatically projects it for the rest of the season. And that's not the case, usually. You know, each week is a week-to-week matchup, which is basically built on the matchups within the game that predicate why one thing works one week and one thing doesn't another week. So, you know, for example, there are a bunch of Cowboy fans now that are just screaming, oh, we're terrible. No, you went to Denver where they never really win, never really lose a home game. And then, you know, the altitude, and they have a really good rushing defense. So that's kind of what happened. There are some concerns for the Bills offense. There's no question about it. There have been concerns for a while about the Bills offense. But, you know, you took on a Carolina team, which has yet to give up a touchdown in two games now, the win up in San Francisco and the win back at Carolina last week. So there are things that have to get better with the Bills offense, and I think obviously trying to expound on the passing game is a big part.
Trey, I would have to believe this early in the season, that segment that you guys do, Overreaction Monday, is like amplified when it's week one, week two, week three, because these teams are still trying to get settled in.
Well, it is funny. When it started, it was just going to be for the first week of the season. We were only going to do it week one because everyone's crazy after the first game. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, everybody sort of took off, so we're just doing it every week. You know, we actually did this once last year when the Patriots went 3-1 without Tom Brady. The overreaction was, you know, the Patriots don't need Tom Brady to win. And it's Overreaction Monday, okay? Please understand what we're going for here. But no, you're right. It's amplified, especially during the first couple of weeks of the year.
Trey Wingo, our guest, host of ESPN's NFL Live. To the Bills for a second here, Trey. If they can't run, as they clearly could not last week against Carolina, they really don't have much to offer anybody offensively. They've got to get that fixed. I would think that'd be job one for the Buffalo Bills, huh?
Yeah, they've got to find some diversity on offense. I mean, look, you're going to be fine as long as Shady is okay, but they're going to have something else to go along with that. And obviously, the departure of a lot of the wide receivers was a big issue this offseason. But they've got to get some of those guys to step up. You know, Zay Jones had a chance down at the end of the game. Could the throw have been a little bit better? Absolutely. Maybe if he had not it kept running, it might have been a perfect play on that 4th-and-11. But, you know, that's going to take some time. So these are the kind of things that they're going to have to work on going forward. But you're going to have to get something else. You have to be more one-dimensional on offense for Buffalo if you're going to have real success this season.
Trey, did you feel like they needed to do something different, maybe move Shady around and try to get him the ball in different spots?
Yeah, look, Shady can clearly catch the ball out of the backfield. There's no question about it. But again, you're going up against a pretty good Carolina defense that you had to give up a touchdown through the first two games of the year. Now, granted, one was against San Francisco, and we all know their struggles, and they still haven't scored a touchdown. And one was against the Bills that are, you know, somewhat limited on offense right now. But if Shady is your best weapon. Shady and Tyrod's legs right now are your best weapon. So you've got to find a way to utilize both of those things to maximum advantage.
Trey, let's talk about the Bills' opponents this week. I mean, they were up against a very good defense in Carolina on Sunday. Here comes, I would think, an even better defense coming to Buffalo this week in the Denver Broncos. It gets a little bit rougher for the Bills this week, I would think.
9-3 might be a good score again this week as well. I mean, with these two defenses, I mean, basically the Bills' defense is very good too. I mean, they did get after Cam Newton and kept them out of the end zone. So, you know, the Broncos are really interesting, guys, because their one weakness last year was something that really the Bills could have exploited, and that was their run defense. I mean, they were gashed on the ground last year as opposed to the year before when they won the Super Bowl. But if you look at the first 2 weeks of the season now, they held Melvin Ingram to 47 yards, and they held Zeke Elliott to 9 carries for 8 yards. He was less than a yard a carry. So what was a real weakness for Denver last year has suddenly turned into a strength. And then you take, okay, if you're not being able to run on Denver's defense, nobody throws on Denver's defense. There's a reason why they're called the no-fly zone. So the Bills have got to find a way to get that running game going because they're not going to be able to throw for 250 and 3 scores against Denver's defense. This Denver defense is playing a lot like it did in 2015 as opposed to it did in 2016 when they missed the postseason.
Now, Trey, I think the biggest difference in Denver's team opposed to Carolina is Trevor Siemian is actually moving the ball with that offense. They are actually, it seems like they are moving the ball at ease and scoring touchdowns at ease.
Yeah, look, a lot of people keep saying, well, when are they going to get a quarterback? And there are now a few people that are beginning to understand. Trevor Siemian's a pretty good quarterback. Now, I'm not saying he's a top 10 quarterback, but he's a quarterback that he threw for 4 touchdown passes against the Dallas Cowboys. And he played very effectively for 3.5 quarters against the San Diego Chargers. If they can avoid the stupid mistakes, the turnovers, like he threw that one screen pass on the Monday night opener to the feet of one of his receivers, and you know it bounced around and was picked up, and then Jamal Charles fumbled. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly they're in a game where they were up by 17 in the fourth quarter. They had to hang on to win by 3. The only thing that Trevor is doing wrong right now
is he's a little careless with the way he runs and sometimes a little careless with the way he throws the football. But that first touchdown pass on Sunday was a play action to Emmanuel Sanders, and I'm telling you, that guy was not open. Sean Lee was in great space dropping back off because he didn't bite on the play action. And Trevor Siemian let it loose anyway, and it was a perfect throw to Emmanuel Sanders. Now, there are little things that Siemian needs to do better. Like, for example, right before the half, he ran and scrambled for a first down inside the Cowboys' 10-yard line. They eventually went on to score a touchdown on that drive. But the Cowboys were out of timeouts, and as soon as he got the first down, instead of sliding, he ran out of bounds. So, in other words, if he had just slid in that situation, they probably would have scored because Denver had all their timeouts. They could have managed the clock the way they wanted to. And they probably still would have scored the touchdown anyway, but they left time on the clock. And what happened right before the end of the half, the Cowboys had a minute 20 to go down the field, and they scored. It was only 3 points, but those were 3 points that Trevor Siemian kind of allowed the Cowboys to have by running out of bounds. And those are little things that he's still learning because it's only his second year, you know, in the league, or second year starting, rather. So those are little things that can be negative if, you know, everything doesn't go your way, and those are things he has to clean up. But I think Siemian has a really bright future in the NFL.
Hey, Trey, it's this Sunday's game here in Orchard Park. It's a matchup of two first-year head coaches, each one in their third NFL regular season game. We know about Sean McDermott. What can you tell us about Vance Joseph, and what sort of imprint has he made on the Broncos in this at this early juncture of the season?
Well, the most interesting thing about Vance is that, you know, He was a guy, actually, that a lot of teams coveted to be their defensive coordinator before he ended up being that in Miami. He's had a really interesting career. He played quarterback at Colorado. He played defensive back in the NFL for a couple of years. Then he did some college coaching, and then, as you said, very close to Sean McDermott, he's had the same path in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who I think has done a couple of things very well. Number one, he's allowed his position coaches to handle the bulk work of what they need to do. And the guy they kept over from the last staff, Joe Woods, who was a secondary coach under Wade Phillips when he was the defensive coordinator, he's now the defensive coordinator, and he has done an unbelievable job getting that defense back to the level it was in 2015, albeit through the first two games of the year. I get that. And Vance has been basically sort of the CEO of this team, and he's got them to believe in the idea that, listen, we can win and we can compete as long as we finish. And that was the thing that he was disappointed in the week one and Monday night, where they sort of let the Chargers back into that game when they had them by the throat. And what was the most impressive thing about week two is the Cowboys never really had a chance to get back in it. Both of their touchdowns were scored off turnovers. One they had to go 5 yards and one they had to go 39 yards. So if they protect the ball, Denver's going to be a very, very difficult team to beat.
Denver is one of the three 2-0 teams in the AFC West. There's only one division with the three unbeaten teams so far. What do you make of that division, and who do you think is going to come out on top, at least looking at it after a couple of weeks?
Well, not only that, but the Chargers are two field goals away from potentially being 2-0.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
You know, but the Chargers, my God, I don't know how you're a Chargers fan, because every week they look like they're going to win, and somehow they snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. It's unbelievable. Look, the AFC West is loaded. And remember, 3 years ago, I think it was, they did send three teams to the playoffs, the Chiefs, the Chargers, and the Broncos. So they're a very deep, deep unit, or deep division, rather. I think the Raiders are really good, and the Broncos are really good. But Kansas City, look, I mean, they've got Tyreek Hill, they've got this kid Kareem Hunt, and their defense is pretty good. Over the long term, I'm still looking at Kansas City, but look, it wouldn't surprise me if Denver won that division, or if Oakland won that division. Marshawn Lynch is the one thing they didn't have last year in Oakland. And I just don't mean for the dancing on the sidelines, which I thought was awesome, by the way. But he's a tone setter for them, man. He comes in there. He's never going to be that guy he was in Seattle because they don't need him to be. They've got three running backs that they can rotate in and out. But when beast mode comes in, you best believe, you know, hit your pants up because he's going to come right at you.
Yeah, he's definitely going to come right at you. And as you talk about that team out in Oakland, we all know about the receivers outside. We know about, you know, Derek Carr, and then it seems like they have a better defense this year than they did last year. But like you said, Marshawn Lynch, when he comes in, he just changes the attitude of the entire team and the entire stadium out there in Oakland.
Oh, well, kudos to the Jumbotron operator, because when they saw Lynch dancing on the sidelines, they put it up on there. And you could see the entire black hole was swaying and dancing with him. So it's kind of like this bittersweet thing, because one of the things that makes Marshawn great is that he's from Oakland. He went to Oakland Technical High School. He's an Oaktown kid, and it's great that they're winning again, that he's back there, but it's all a placebo because they're going to be moving to Las Vegas in a couple of years. Think about that. The Raiders had this decade of misery, or 12 years or 13 years of misery since last appearing in a Super Bowl when they lost to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Super Bowl 37, and just when they're back and good again, the team is leaving. I mean, that's got to be a gut punch, man.
It's terrible. We're with Trey Wingo, host of ESPN's NFL Live. You mentioned the Chargers, their narrow loss against Miami. Miami gets a win in their first game. And what are we to make of Jay Cutler, especially the Jay Cutler combination with Adam Gase? Is he really like a miracle worker with quarterbacks, Adam Gase?
Well, look, the best year Jay Cutler ever had, somewhat statistically, was with Adam Gase when he was the offensive coordinator in Chicago when Jay was the quarterback there. Most importantly, Jay Cutler's best touchdown-to-interception ratio was that year. Because that's the thing about Jay. You know he can make all the throws, and sadly, Jay knows he can make all the throws, which allows him to sometimes make throws he shouldn't make. And then the thing that's great about Gase is that he was able to sort of, you know, rein in Cutler a little bit. So I think, you know, some people, you know, give me 90% of you. Adam Gase is finding a way to get 85 to 90% of Jay Cutler, and I think that's the best thing about their relationship.
I think the biggest thing for Jay Cutler is he has true weapons outside that can go get the ball. He has a good offensive line in front of him, and he has a good running game.
Well, Jay Ajayi is there. They got Kenny Stills. They got Jarvis Landry. They got Devontae. I mean, they do have weapons. And, you know, it is interesting. Melvin Ingram, the Chargers defensive end, was asked before the game, what problems does Jay Cutler present? And he said, absolutely none. I think he might have a different answer now. He might have a different answer.
Hey, Trey, Patriots got back on their feet with a pretty impressive win at New Orleans last week. Are they back on track, or are there still some things to watch for when you look at New England?
Well, look, I think the long play is always going to be the right one with New England, so we'll figure it out in December. But if you didn't see that one coming, I mean, that was the easiest call on the entire board. I mean, the last time the Patriots were two games under 500 was October of 2001. They hadn't won a Super Bowl yet in the Brady and Belichick era. So, you know, the idea that they would not go on the road to New Orleans after extra rest and being embarrassed, right, on that Thursday night season opener and not at least put up a tremendous offensive performance, you know, you should probably take up bingo or something else if you didn't see that one playing out the way it did on the offensive side. Look, they still have issues on defense, but over a 16-game season, I'm going to bet on Bill Belichick and company finding a way to figure that out.
Trey, what about the game last night and the Giants? The Giants just do not look like they are that good of a team offensively, and defensively for that matter. So what do you think about the Giants?
Well, I actually think the defense is pretty good there. And they, you know, they gave up a couple of big plays to Stafford, but you know, the offense is just pathetic. And you know, we talked about this to start this segment. We talked about it last week. You know, blocking matters, and they can't block anybody. And they've got to do something with Ereck Flowers, the left tackle. And they just can't go trade for a player. I mean, that's not going to happen. What they can do is they can either chip him with a fullback or a tight end on almost every play, or switch him to right tackle. Because I think a lot of people projected him to be a right tackle to begin with based on his skill set. And if he's on the right tackle, he's not going to get up against the likes of Ziggy Ansah, you know, on every play, who's just a freakish athlete. Ansah had 3 sacks last night. He had 2 all of last year. Okay, now granted, Ansah was a little down last year, but he's still a really good pass rusher. So if you're on the right side, you can protect Ereck Flowers' deficiencies a little better. Problem is, outside of their center, they really don't have a really solid member of that offensive line, and that's going to be a huge problem for them going forward. Guys, the Giants have not scored 20 points in 8 straight games. In this day and age in the NFL, with those weapons, Odell Beckham Jr., Sterling Shepard, Brandon Marshall, the kid Evan Engram, who's going to be a really good wide receiver slash tight end, he's really not a tight end,
right,
for those guys, with Eli Manning throwing him the ball, if he has time, that the fact that those guys can't score 20 points a game, that's a real problem.
I think the biggest thing you said there was if he has time. But, you know, one of the players that does surprise me about that offense is Brandon Marshall. We all know he's getting older, but he just doesn't look like the same Brandon Marshall we've seen over the years.
No, he doesn't. Not at all. You know, he even alluded to it after the game. But I'll tell you one funny side bit to that. A lot of people took to Twitter to vent their anger at Brandon Marshall, the Giants wide receiver, except they were tweeting at Brandon Marshall, the Broncos linebacker. And the best part about it was Marshall, the linebacker, was playing along like people would say, blank, 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 he's like, say that to my face. Or some guy says, catch the damn ball. And you're like, meet me in the parking lot. I mean,
it was during the game.
It was during the game. They were getting trolled massively, and they didn't even know it. It was quite good.
Last thing, Trey, the Giants, one of those teams that I thought about earlier when I talked about bad football. Indianapolis Colts are another one. Should Chuck Pagano be on coach watch right now? I mean, are we at that stage after an 0-2 start in Indy?
Yeah, maybe. You know, look, what am I going to say? They don't have a good offensive line either.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're sensing a theme here. Seattle has yet to score a touchdown, I think. Oh, no, they threw one to Paul Richardson. But, you know, that was Russell Wilson running for his life and then finding Paul Richardson in the end zone. The Colts are a hot mess right now. And you're finding out just how good Andrew Luck is. Like, the year Peyton Manning missed the entire season in 2011 and the Colts went 2-14, I'm like, hey, probably should have won the MVP that year too, because we saw how important he was to his team. And clearly, Andrew Luck has covered a myriad of sins during his career for the Indianapolis Colts. And they have had time to address that, and that's why they made the change at GM, because you know, Ryan Grigson, while he had Andrew Luck under that rookie contract, didn't build around him correctly. And you know, they still have they've had more offensive line combinations in Indy since Andrew Luck's been there than any other team in football. And that's just not a way to win. You can't win that way.
Hey, Trey, thanks for this. We'll be watching on ESPN. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday. Thank you.
You got all about the mayo baths, by the way. What's going on in Buffalo? You the tables, they jump into vats of mayonnaise. You guys take
fringe.
It to a new level every week.
That's
it's unbelievable.
That's
now,
the
mayonnaise
fringe.
Was in Jacksonville, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the lunatic fringe. We don't acknowledge that.
Buffalo is sticking to the tables.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Trey.
All right, guys, have fun.
Trey Wingo, he is the host of ESPN's NFL Live, and coming up in November, he will be the co-host of ESPN Radio's Golic and Wingo on the radio. Coming up next, a little high school football talk. Donald's getting ready to call another high school football game right across the parking lot at New Era Field this Friday night. Canisius Joes and Canisius football coach Rich Robbins will join us in studio when we return. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones, as we talk a lot about the Bills, but there's another football game coming up here this weekend at One Bills Drive. It's Friday night, 7 o'clock. It is St. Joe's and Canisius, the big rivalry game. It's here at New Era Field, 7 o'clock kickoff on Friday. It'll be broadcast on MSG and streamed live on onebuffalo.com. It'll be Chris Brown and Donald Jones handling the call of the game. And joining us in studio, the head coach of the Canisius Crusaders in his seventh year, Coach Rich Robbins. Coach, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
John, thanks for having me. This is great.
How do your kids feel about coming here to play this week?
Excited. I mean, you know, anytime you get to play in your, you know, a lot of your heroes' stadiums, these kids all grow up Bills fans, you know, most of them. So anytime you get to come out and play at the stadium, it's a big thing for our guys.
A lot of kids with Donald Jones jerseys, I'm sure.
No, not Donald Jones jerseys. These kids are... They were young when I was here.
Joe's played here last week, and they had a rough game, but you were at that game. What did you think of the atmosphere in the stadium? What did you think of that game last week?
No, you know, the atmosphere was great. It was confusing because everybody's in maroon, you know, when Aquinas plays Joe's.
Yeah.
But, you know, Joe's had a great student section on hand, and, you know, the game was, you know, much more competitive than I think the score got to be at times. So it was a real enjoyable game.
You talk about the student sections. I've heard about this game, and, you know, obviously it's the big rivalry, and you have a lot of fans there. The student section for Joe's, they were going back and forth a little bit. I expect a little bit of that this week.
Yeah, it'll be big this week. It's always a lot of fun. I know both student bodies really look forward to, you know, getting out there on opposite sides of that staircase and, you know, yelling at each other and chanting at each other. So it's always always a great atmosphere.
What's been your most memorable Joe's Canisius game in your 7 years as head coach?
Oh, man, it's been a lot of good ones. You know, I would probably say in 2012, you know, that was our first undefeated season, and we, you know, we really arrived in 2012. We played them there at their place in a pouring rainstorm, and Quadri Olison, who's the running back at Pitt now, I think 41 carries for 340 yards. So, I mean, he was spectacular that day. We won 28-21, you know, came right down to the last minute. That was a pretty good one.
Well, obviously you won the game, so it was good. But what is it with coaches and, like, especially like linemen and those types of players that like to play in the rain? I just hated playing in the rain. What is that, Coach?
Well, you know, you can tell I was, you know, I was a lineman myself, you know, so big guys like the rain. You know, they like the mud, and even though we were on turf that day, I think, you know, Quadri being a big back and a kid who likes to, you know, get going, it certainly set up well for us.
You know, in some programs there's the one rivalry game, and I think people mean it a little bit. Like, it doesn't matter if you win any other game, you got to win this game. You've won state championships in your tenure at Canisius. But is it still that kind of a feeling about this game? Like, if you could pick one game to win all year, it would be St. Joe's, or you have bigger fish to fry?
No, absolutely. You know, we're a program that certainly wants to win Monsignor Martin and state championships, but never lose sight of the fact that, you know, Joe's is our rival. You know, when I got the job as head coach 7 years ago, when you go to any alumni functions or things around the school, it's made pretty clear to you that, you know, that's the game that is the most important to our alumni. And, you know, we tell our boys, you know, 10 years from now at your reunion, 20 years from now at a golf tournament, you know, this is the one people are going to ask you about. You know, how'd you do against St. Joe's?
Big pep rally this week for getting,
yeah,
getting
we've got some you know, got some good things going on at the school. It's kind of spirit week with different themes every day. I know Thursday we're, you know, kind of doing a big pep rally. We're going to have some, you know, some of our past alumni, you know, John Urschel, Blake Hobiel, you know, Quadri, some guys kind of Skype in and participate in that. So it'll be pretty neat. And then Friday I think they're doing a tailgate, you know, at the school out in the backfield, you know, Lloyd's taco truck and, you know, all kinds of things going on. There's some great alumni, you know, tailgate events and some things going on in the Van Miller Club during the game. So big week for the school and all of our, you know, all of our folks.
Talking with Rich Robbins, he's head coach at Canisius High School here in Buffalo. They're going to play here at New Era Field on Friday night, 7 o'clock against St. Joe's, their big rivals. You talked about the pep rally with a couple of your alumni Skyping in, including John Urschel, who you coached at Canisius and went on to a great career at Penn State and then a good start to his career in the NFL, and he pulled the plug this past summer. Did you talk with him about that? Did you counsel him at all about that?
No, you know, John's always made his own decisions. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about John. You know, he knows what he wants to do, and once he gets his mindset on something, you know, he usually follows through. So we didn't have a lot of conversations, you know, leading up. But I kind of knew where his head was at the last couple of years, and a lot of people point to the concussioner, but that really wasn't it. I mean, this was something that John had been thinking about for a while anyway, with his mind and everything else he can do in the world. And, you know, he's getting married, and he's having a kid, and it's just, you know, he's getting to a different point in his life, and I know he was really excited about getting to MIT and, you know, really getting into the math stuff full time.
Where do you think his future will be? Right. Will it be as a university professor?
Anywhere he wants, John. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with him. I mean, he's just an amazing human being. So whatever he wants to do when he gets done at MIT, and he just really enjoys that high-level math. So there's really a few things in the world that are options for him, and, you know, he can do whatever he wants.
What's it like to have a guy like him? Well, he will come back and maybe speak to the team and things like that. When you have a player like that who most high school kids dream of playing in the NFL. He got there, and then he decided on his own terms that he wanted to walk away. What's it like to have somebody like that come back and talk to your team?
No, and it's a great message. I mean, at Canisius, our guys are very academically challenged as well. So, you know, the athletic and academic rigor those guys go through is tough. So I think it's great for them to see somebody like John, who, you know, was Mr. Canisius, which is like our top guy every year at the school back in 2009, and did everything the right way. You know, you can't find anybody that has a bad thing to say about John, teachers, coaches, anybody. So I think it's that, you know, kind of being a true Renaissance man and kind of taking care of all areas of your life is really what John can speak to with these young fellas.
Coach Urschel is just one of several players that your program has put into Division I football. I was watching Michigan, can't remember who a couple of weeks ago, but T.J. Wheatley just a couple of years ago. Big tight end, big blocking tight end for Michigan. Of course, his dad coached here and played in the NFL, Tyrone Wheatley. But T.J. Wheatley seems to me like at a very young age is going to have a bright future in college football and maybe at the next level, huh?
Yeah, I mean, T.J.'s a fantastic player. You know, it's obviously in the blood. You know, yeah. all the Wheatleys are great players. His brother Terrius is at Virginia Tech. You know, Tyreek, his youngest brother, is going to make some waves in college football. So, and T.J.'s just so big. I mean, that's what struck you when he first came to visit us at the school. It's like, wow, this kid's really big. And with Coach Harbaugh and all the hard work up there at Michigan, he's really, you know, done a nice job and added some more good weight. And, you know, he's playing really well out there. So anytime you got a few guys playing out in the Big Ten, you know, Blake, you know, Hobiel kicking at Ohio State. And it's I wish I got to get to more games. Unfortunately, right. We're always playing on Saturdays and things. So I wish I got to see him more. But it's neat to go after our game like this past week. And we had some different games on TV. And you're seeing different guys do some good things out there.
Hey, Coach, let's talk about this year. You are 2-1 to start the year with a big win to start the year at Pittsford, which is a perennial state power, much like yourselves.
Yeah, Pittsford was a very, very good team. You know, very big up front, a senior-laden offensive line. They've got some really nice, you know, skill players. So that was a big challenge to go into their place on a Friday night. But, you know, they were great and welcomed us in. And, you know, we had a great game with them. It's something I think we're going to try to continue, you know, into next year.
And a close loss in your second game in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania against, is it Archbishop Devitt? Is it Bishop Devitt?
Just Bishop. Bishop Devitt. Yeah, okay. Bishop McDevitt.
McDevitt, that's it.
You know, Shady, LaShawn McCoy's, you know, high school. Yeah. And they've averaged about 12 or 13 wins a season over the last 5 years. I mean, that's a powerhouse program. you know, down in Pennsylvania. But those are the kind of games that, you know, we like to take and, and kind of take Western New York football on the road and go showcase that, you know, we play a pretty good brand of football around here as well.
How much of a challenge is it for you to travel like that? And you talked about it, you only have, what, two home games. When you have to travel outside the state, how much of a challenge is that for these young players in high school?
Yeah, I mean, it's especially challenging in the first week of school. You know, we're just back to school. Everybody's getting settled into their classes. And, you know, here we go on Friday, pulling them out of school early and hopping on a bus and driving 5 hours down to Harrisburg. So the logistics of that, the travel, the food, the bus, making sure everybody's taken care of, it's a lot, you know. But the pros, I think, again, is that we get to go experience Friday Night Lights down in Pennsylvania. It was a huge crowd, the band, you know. And when our kids do well and have good film against programs like that, it really helps them, you know, with their college prospects. There were some recruiters there watching some young men from McDevitt, and obviously a Jace Johnson, Kenyatta Houston, even some of our linemen, you know, it was good because they got, you know, we got some emails that next week and got some more notice for those guys. So.
And last week you got your second win closer to home with a 78-0 shutout over time in St. Jude. Important to note that you pulled your starters and what backups were on the field for 49 of those 78 points, right?
Yeah, you know, we knew coming in, obviously, with all the seniors. I mean, I have 24 seniors. They have 24 kids on their team, you know, so it was a huge challenge for them. You know, credit to Coach Licata and their program for trying to, you know, have varsity football this year. And I know it's important for those seniors that they had on their team. So, you know, unfortunately, some fumbles, some interceptions, just, you know, it obviously, you know, got away a little bit. But, you know, we tried to do everything we could to, you know, respect them and those kids and kind of, you know, have the best game we could.
78-0 sounds like a shootout, but you had 5 sacks and 3 interceptions. You're playing great defense, too.
Yeah, no, the defense, you know, the defense played well, and that was a young group, you know, kind of coming into the year. We only had 2 starters back on D. You know, we knew with Jace and Paul Woods and, you know, some of the guys we had offensively coming back, we were going to score some points and be good there. But, you know, the young defense has really been coming around. And, again, I think games against Pittsford and their size, going down to Pennsylvania, playing against their size and strength, you know, hopefully has set us up for success down the stretch.
And now, coming into this week, you will play St. Joe's Friday night. They're coming off of a loss, you know, against Aquinas last week. What do you expect, or what challenges do they pose for your team?
Well, you know, I know it's cliche, but anytime you play your rival, you know, they're going to be the best St. Joe's they can be Friday night. And I expect us to be the best Canisius we can be. There's a lot of distractions this week and a lot of big lights and you know, things in the stadium. So it's really the team that can kind of limit that stuff and focus on the job at hand. But we expect to get their best shot on Friday night for sure.
I want to ask you, you mentioned Jace Johnson a couple of times. Tell us about him, your quarterback, who threw a couple of touchdown passes last week. Huh?
Yeah, you know, Jace's development has been unbelievable. You know, really towards the end of last year, he was hitting his stride. He had a fantastic state championship game, you know, threw for 300 and something yards, 5 touchdowns, ran in a couple more. So he kind of picked up where he left off. He was special that first night against Pittsford. I know their staff was real impressed, and the Pennsylvania coaches were asking me how many offers he's got and where he's going. Mm-hmm. So I think this year he's really jumping off the film and jumping out at people. And, you know, he's worked real hard to get there and kind of leads our football and basketball team as our quarterback and point guard. And, you know, we're hoping he'll have a lot of options college-wise here in the next couple months.
Donald insisted that I let him ask the question about R.J. Brandon, so he looks good for the boss.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah. I guess just tell me a little bit about R.J. Brandon. There you go, Russ. Thank you.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, having R.J. and his younger brother Jack in the program has been great. You know, Russ and Amy and their family are great and very good to us. And, you know, R.J. is a great player. You know, he's a very good receiver. He runs great routes. He catches everything, you know, that you throw at him. He's faster than people think. You know, and he blocks well, too, for us in the running game. So he's a pretty complete receiver. He has excellent grades, you know, at Canisius, which is a very tough school. So I know that he's been getting some interest from Dartmouth, you know, Brown, and some of those Ivy League, you know, high-end academic schools. So, you know, hopefully he'll have a nice opportunity there if he keeps playing the way he's been playing.
What type of offense do you guys run?
You know, we're more a little spread, you know, this year. We run a lot of different things. We'll go some pro style. We can run anything from, you know, 10 all the way up to 22 personnel. Usually, so a lot of different looks and things. But with Jace back there and being an experienced operator, being a returning starter, it gives us a little more ability to, you know, really give him some options and let him make the reads and kind of do some things on the field that only a senior quarterback can kind of do.
If you're running, you know, pro style spread, you know, a couple of different things, the slot receiver has to be important. So a guy like RJ probably will get some burn on Friday night and get some catches.
No, absolutely. You know, that's a talented group. You know, with Paul Woods heading to Rutgers, who's been hampered, you know, with an injury all year. We really haven't seen the 100% Paul Woods yet, so we're hoping he's good to go Friday night. And, you know, with Giovanni Gilchrist and Keenan Ollison and Ryan Falk and John Minot, I mean, that's a very, you know, deep group of receivers. And of course, RJ's right in that mix as well and does a great job. He's our leading receiver, you know, right now so far through three games. So he's doing a nice job.
It's not just skill position either. I saw where Will McGinnis is a Trench Trophy nominee for this past week. Talk about him and some of the other guys.
Yeah, Will's a terrific two-way starter for us. He was a two-way starter last year as a junior. And, you know, Will plays lacrosse. He's a defenseman in lacrosse, too. So he's very fit. You know, he's a healthy, fit kid for a lineman. He's only about 230 pounds, but he also benches almost 400 pounds. Mm-hmm. You know, he's one of the strongest kids we've had in the program. So as he's had to battle these last couple weeks with some of those 300-pounders, you know, it's amazing how he's able to kind of hold up and do a great job. So, you know, he, along with other seniors like Brad Carell and Nick DeLuca, you know, and Jarrett Benton for us, we have a senior-laden offensive line, which is always a plus.
You played St. Joe's at your place, Stransky Complex. You're playing him on Kenmore Avenue. What do you think the atmosphere will be like, and how will it be Friday night here in the stadium, in the big stadium?
Yeah, you know, it's always tricky when you get into, obviously, a big venue like that. Yeah. When you do it at the schools, it feels a lot more on top of you and loud. But, you know, we've played him at the stadium, you know, throughout the years, once or twice in the playoffs and the postseason. You know, games, and still, you could still feel it, you know, especially on the sideline right there with the kids kind of right there, you know, chanting at you. So I think it's tough to move it out of the local, you know, venues because of the intimacy of it and the tradition of it. But anytime you can come out, like I said, to the big stadium and bright lights on a Friday night and do this, I think it's a great thing for everybody.
Good luck to you. Thanks for coming in here, Coach.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Rich Robbins is going to have his Canisius Crusaders play St. Joe's 7 o'clock here at New Era Field, 7 o'clock at the stadium. The game will be broadcast on MSG, and on it'll be video streamed on onebuffalo.com. Donald Jones going to have the call of the game along with Chris Brown Friday night at 7 o'clock. Speaking of high schools, time now for our Ad Pro Sports Coaches of the Week. And we start in Section 6, where it's Chad Bartosek from Franklinville, Ellicottville. The Titans on the road at Maple Grove, number 2 ranked team in Class D, and came out with a win over the Red Dragons 26-6. The two teams met last year in the Class D final here at New Era Field. And in Section 5, the Ad Pro Sports Coach of the Week, it's Brian Herdline from Leroy. They beat Cal Mum 19-18 in the two schools' 102nd meeting. Leroy drove 79 yards in the fourth quarter for the game-winning score. The High School Coaches of the Week, sponsored by Ad Pro Sports. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Thurman Thomas joined us in the 1 o'clock hour today, the Hall of Fame running back, and we got his opinion on what went wrong for the Buffalo Bills last Sunday in Carolina.
Well, you know, just like everybody's been saying, John, it was just not a good performance by the offense, and I think the as players, you know that. You know, I've been in some games where, you know, we haven't did anything on the offensive side of the ball, but at the end, still having kind of an opportunity to win a football game there. But I think, you know, when you're talking about this Bills offense, you know, they put in, the two tight ends, fullback, and one wide receiver, and I think that's kind of played into the Carolina's defense, if that's what they wanted to do.
Thurman Thomas on his view of the loss at Carolina. He joined us in the 1 o'clock hour. Trey Wingo joined us earlier this hour, the host of ESPN's NFL Live show. And Trey Wingo, we asked for his opinion on the Denver Broncos' new head coach, Vance Joseph.
He's a guy who I think has done a couple of things very well. Number one, he's allowed his position coaches to handle the bulk work of what they need to do. And the guy they kept over from the last staff, Joe Woods, who was a secondary coach under Wade Phillips when he was the defensive coordinator. He's now the defensive coordinator, and he has done an unbelievable job getting that defense back to the level it was in 2015, albeit through the first two games of the year. I get that. And then Vance has been basically sort of the CEO of this team, and he's got them to believe in the idea that, listen, we can win and we can compete as long as we finish.
Broncos 2-0 under head coach Vance Joseph. Of all the new head coaches in the NFL this year, including Sean McDermott and the rest of them, I think we said this way back when those moves were going down back in January and February. It doesn't look like anybody walked into a better situation than Vance Joseph out there.
Oh, man, yeah.
Because of the defense primarily.
Because of the defense. And, you know, they also have weapons on offense as well. You know, they just needed to make sure that they had a solid offensive line, which one of their offensive linemen did go down. And that's going to be something we have to watch for. But he did walk into a good situation out there.
And he had Trevor Siemian. Now, neither one of us have dug into tape yet on Denver. I haven't. Have you?
No.
Obviously, he's playing well, but I'm interested to get a look at him with my own eyes with, you know, a little bit more extra time to look at Trevor Siemian and see what he's doing well, right?
He's just distributing the ball around to everybody. You know, he's not. They're not asking him to do too much. He's just getting it out to everybody across the board. They are running the ball effectively, and their defense is playing so good, getting them the ball back, turnovers and everything, that he's just moving the ball, managing that game.
Talked a lot about the Buffalo defense today because it is going well. Two games in, number two ranked defense in the NFL. They'll go up against Trevor Siemian and the Denver Broncos. Our Twitter poll today, who should get the most credit for the Bills' strong start so far this season on defense? Who gets the credit? Who's responsible for it? More than 3,400 votes in on Twitter. Almost half of you responding, 47%, say it's the coaching staff. Sean McDermott, Leslie Frazier, coaches on the defensive side of the ball. 25% of you, a quarter, say it's the defensive backfield, in particular the play of Jordan Poyer, who's come up with some big plays on the back end of the defense. 24% of you say the defensive front, Kyle Williams, Lorenzo Alexander, and the rest of them. 4% say somebody else. I would vote for defensive front. Donald, you would vote for, who did you say?
Defensive front.
I would
go with the defensive front.
Yeah,
I think it all starts up in the trenches. I get people's thought on the coaches, but I'm more on the defensive front.
Me too. Okay. We'll pose a new question for you tomorrow. We've got Steve Tasker coming on the show tomorrow, plus an update from the Bills practice field on tomorrow's show. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Derek Kramer is our Entercom board op. Production assistants today from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, and a little bit of help from Jay Harris.
A little bit, yeah.
We'll see you tomorrow night at noon. Tomorrow afternoon at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.